apologize for the delay. The program says that we're starting at 9 o'clock. But
we would never dream of doing that if it was a patient who was in mental incapacity as an adult, that they would have to go and pay for their own private consultant. And then the last question about the role of magistrates. I think one of the interesting developments in child justice in South Africa has been the fact that at an early point, the decision was made to place all of the emphasis on magistrates, hence the development of the preliminary inquiry.
I want to welcome everybody who is in the house today, and I hope that all the views that we'll be putting forward here are going to be of great assistance to the members of Parliament who form part of the Portfolio Committee and Parliament in general to come up with an informed view in terms of how do we amend the Labour Relations Act. At this stage, I want to emphasize, I heard that there are people who are talking on the media that the ANC has taken a position. There is no position that has been taken by the ruling party. I'm sure some of you have listened to some talk shows that we had during this week and the interviews that we had as well over the radios. We were very clear that we will not take any position because it will mean that there is no need of public hearings. Until such time, we will deliberate on the views that you will be putting in front of us today. So everybody is welcome to express himself or herself in a very free manner so that nobody comes out of this house to say that I was not able because I was there will be no intimidation. We are free. You want to say they must stay. It's your, if you believe in that, that labor brokers must stay, then that's fine. That's your democratic right. And I hope that the labor brokers themselves have given themselves an opportunity to come and talk to the people. I thank you. We can start. The first person on the list is consulting engineers and project managers. Mr. Doug Armstrong will be the person who's starting.
Madam Chairperson?
Yes, sir.
Madam Chairperson and the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to express our business's views on the, and I speak on behalf of, a consulting and engineering and project management firm. My name is Doug Armstrong and the company concerned is Reed Swartman and Voigt Consulting. We have offices in Johannesburg, Perth, Australia, and Phoenix in the USA. We are currently running 49 major mining projects, and our clients comprise the major mining houses in South Africa and internationally. Our core business is that of building mines, mining infrastructure, designing mines, and developing mines so that they are able to exploit new ore bodies. The turnover of the business is in excess of 1,000 million. And this clearly puts us fairly low down in the scale of major project management. We employ approximately 1,250 staff, most of whom fall into the category we are discussing today, and they are supplied through labor brokers. However, I need to add at this stage that these individuals are at the top end of the market, and when I refer to the top end of the market, I mean these are people with major skills, and might I add, very scarce skills. Over the past 15 years, our business has concluded agreements with a number of temporary employment service providers or labor brokers. And the reason for this is to regulate the relationship between our business and to ensure that these companies comply with the requirements of the various labor statutes as they stand at present. Our submission is that it would be very difficult for businesses such as ours who indulge in major projects and major project development to operate without a flexible workforce. And it is our submission at this point that in the current labor environment, it is extremely difficult to operate flexibly in terms of labor if you do not have access to what we commonly term labor brokers. The reason for reliance on labor brokers, there are a couple of reasons and I'll run through them fairly quickly. This is access to scarce skills. Labor brokers, in our experience, keep large databases of the specialist skills that particularly our business requires and requires at short notice. They also provide the flexibility, and when I refer to flexibility, in the project management environment, it is a given that a project has a finite life cycle. And typically what happens is that once a major project is completed, whether it be a railway, a mine, infrastructure such as we're seeing in terms of the 2010 stadia, or even Gautrain projects, these projects are handed over to the owners and they are run by a different group of people. The people that have planned, executed, drafted, designed, that bit of infrastructure are no longer involved and they move on. They move on to another project and not necessarily always to another company. And that's a very important point for us. In terms of productivity, if you hire or engage somebody from a labor broker, it is our view that you are effectively taking on an employee from another company, because that's what the law says. But more than that, the person who provides that individual in fact operates as that individual's agent. So what you have is you have a person with a vested interest in this, in the success of that individual. So it is completely dissimilar to a company such as ours taking on a person on a fixed term contract for a number of years, and at the end of that contract then asking them to leave. The fact of the matter is they are then left to their own devices. However, if they are employed through a labor broker, the labor broker in most cases will ensure that that person is then hired onto a new job or a new project almost immediately. And this is obviously very important. Then there are some lesser issues. In terms of planning, reducing overhead costs on projects, it is very useful to be able to cost your labor exactly and to be able to move teams around. Clearly, you also do not need, as a corporate, the same overhead resources in terms of human resources, finance, to manage a large labor force. And last of all, it is our view that by the use of people through temporary employment services, we are remaining internationally competitive. The skills that these people have are incredibly portable. If you are a project manager on a project in South Africa, you can be a project manager on a project anywhere in the world. And therefore, it is necessary to be able to source the right people at the right time, at the right cost. Certainly, we would like to see that our economy continues to be able to provide such wonderful facilities as we are seeing in terms of the preparations for the World Cup and the Gautrain. Having said that, we are also aware of the view that there exists a certain duality in the labour market, particularly from labour brokers. I mentioned earlier that we engage essentially people from the, let me call it, the upper levels, the more skilled individuals. And from the advert that was placed in the newspaper, it appears that the reason for the debate around labour brokers is simply because there are insufficient controls and it is difficult to control the operations of certain labour brokers. Now, our submission is that if that is the problem, what we should be looking at is allowing the Department of Labor additional measures to be able to control labor brokers who operate outside of the law. The labor brokers that we use clearly are able to place people, they are able to reassign people, they in fact assist people when it comes to the negotiation of their rates and benefits, they provide tax consulting services, they allow access to provident funds, medical aids and insurances, and they provide training to their members. In other words, a full employment service. We also feel that it is unfair for the Department of Labor then to be sad and straddled with the issue of having to deal with many of the country's socio-economic problems simply by legislation. So once again I reiterate that our feeling is that if it is additional control that is required, that is what our suggestion would be. In terms of a way forward, we've heard the discussions about what has happened in the Namibian example, and it is our view that a company such as Namibia, who we understand has now done away with the practice of labour broking, has an economy that will never match that of South Africa's, and certainly we wouldn't think that that would be the kind of country that would end up being able to conduct projects as big as the Gautrain or even host the Soccer World Cup. In our view, then, and in conclusion, the way forward would be for additional powers to be given to the Department of Labor to ensure that through the legal system, the correct taxes, the correct terms and conditions of all employees, whether they be at the highest level or the lowest level, that come from labor brokers, are made to conform with what the law says. I thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Mr. Armstrong, thank you very much for your input. Are there any questions that you want to pose on this report or clarities on the report? Honorable Chairperson of the Caucus of the ANC.
Thank you very much. Look, I just want to check when it says that the labor brokers are helping those people with rates and benefits, help them to build with the skills and whatever. It's not quite clear as to what is it that the employer himself cannot do, which the labor brokers do it better. And second question is that I just want to check as to who is the employer at the end of the day, where this person gets instruction, and how the relationship is being structured between where a person works and from the labor broker company. Because it has never been stipulated as to the relationship between the employer and the worker and who the workers work for. He had never clarified, as a worker I would want to work for a company, where I know who's my manager, where I get instruction, how I'm treated and all the procedures. Two is that how many hours does people earn? Is the industry where you come from workers are earning as per the sectoral determination of that industry, or are they paid as per how much the broker, labor broker want? And does this that the labor brokers are getting more money than the person who is really doing the job? Is that correct? If it's correct, we find that as slavery, you know, that you sell my labor, you are selling my labor expensive and you are getting more for my labor. I should think we need to talk to what we have seen happening in the transport union, the strike of the security, where the bank industry was saying to a security guy, I'm paying 5,000 to your employer per month, but the security guard said I'm earning 1,500 per month. So how are they paying those people? If those people are working according to the Basic Condition of Employment Act, because what I can tell is that those people, all their rights are being waived. They are working overtime, not paid, because the employer wants things to be done. The disciplinary inquiries, the LRA, in the sense of labor brokers, is not implemented because the employers believe it's a long process of disciplining a person going through CCMA and all those things. With labor brokerage, it's easy. They just dismiss a person to the labor broker, and the labor broker will see to finish. And they just set a target time to finish the job, whether those people should get overtime or not. They are working there to finish, as long as the labor broker has met those deadlines with the employer of that person that time. I should think if he can clarify on all those processes, which we believe they are making workers slaves of the past. You sell their labor cheap, expensive, you pay them less, and you stay with a lot of money. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ollis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ian Ollis from the Democratic Alliance. It is our view, obviously, that we don't think that over-regulation is going to help the situation, and we believe that labor brokers should not be disbanded in the way that they have been in Namibia. However, we also are against exploitation of people who are not able to defend themselves. And one of the things that has constantly been thrown around is the question of disputes. If an employee has a dispute with his employer in a conventional employment situation, it's quite clear that there are procedures laid down for how that dispute should be handled. It's complicated when you have a labor broker and an end user of the skill and the employee involved. How have you found in your particular business disputes are handled in terms of when you have employees provided through a broker? How do you deal with disputes in terms of either income or working conditions or these kinds of things? Because that is a problem that we'd like to try to deal with in some fashion. Thank you.
We'll take two more hands, Mr. Armstrong, and then you'll be able to answer the questions after that. Tulas.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. One relates to the rights, and the second one is about the skills debate. What I want to check, we have an experience which is contrary to what I'm asking. Do workers recruited through this form have what I would call the basic labor rights? And I'm adding to that question. I'm talking about the right to join unions of their own choice, the right to collective bargaining, the right to fair labor practice. Do they have those rights? Our experience, I'm from a trade union background, it's the opposite. Secondly, the skills debate, you are claiming that in the industry where you're operating, in the engineering industry, it would be difficult to operate without the labor brokers because of the skills shortages and so on. My understanding is that the people who are recruited through the labor brokers is the unskilled and the semi-skilled, what you call the semi-skilled people. It's not the highly skilled engineers and so on. Those people do not come through the labor brokers. It's the ordinary masses who are recruited through this process. And we don't have a shortage of such skill in South Africa. It's in abundance. So I wonder, how do you explain that?
Thank you, Honorable Mercy, Honorable Gwena.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also have just two questions for now, for clarity. One, you made a call for additional regulations by the Department of Labor, but you have not spelled out those regulations that you are proposing. If there are gaps that you have picked up within the legislative framework in the labor market. But secondly, I would want to know what is your difficulty in us taking a position that the labor brokers are nothing less than a slavery mechanism, and therefore they should be done away with. Instead, we retain an agency, a placement agency, which will do exactly what you are saying in terms of recruiting those skilled people and place them in firms where there are vacancies, but then leave the employment relationship between that worker and those that are offering the actual employment. Would you have difficulty in that kind of an approach being taken by Parliament? Thank you, Chair.
I just want to say that people who want tea, it's outside. You can quietly go out and get your tea, come back inside. It's over to you, Honorable Armstrong.
Madam Chairperson, thank you very much. There certainly were a number of questions. However, I'll do my best to deal with all of them. I think broadly speaking, there is a misconception as to the professionalism of certain of the labour brokers that operate in this country. And I can state quite categorically that our business employs a large proportion of our most skilled individuals, engineers, lead engineers, project managers. These are people who all have engineering degrees, project management qualifications through labour brokers. And I think the point is that if you speak to them, their view is that what is important to them is the job or the project that they are doing. It is not necessarily the company that they work for. This seems to be the way of skilled individuals. And it is basically the project that fires them up. So in other words, I know of a lot of people that did everything they could to be involved in the Gautrain project, because obviously that was seen as a world-class type of endeavor that would enable you to work anywhere in the world once you had that experience. So that is one important point. It is also my experience that, and I did make mention of the fact that there is a large duality in this argument. We certainly have people at the top end and people at the bottom end. Unfortunately, I'm not able to speak on behalf of let's refer to them as your unskilled worker, because we simply do not employ such people. So I think that answers a number of the questions. As to the fee that labour brokers exact from individuals, it is our experience that the labour broker negotiates with us, the person running the project, a fee for that individual, and the discussion then as to the fee that goes to the labour broker is left up to the individual and the labour broker, temporary employment service, their employer to discuss. And I'm sure when you hear from the various broker organisations, they will clarify that issue. So in terms of exploitation, in the people that we deal with and the people that we hire, these are all individuals who are very capable to negotiate on their own behalf, and in my view, they have the additional power behind them of their broker, who knows what the going rates are for specific skills, to assist them in those negotiations should that be necessary. I also made mention of the fact that we enter into individual agreements with all the broker companies that we engage, and therefore on that basis we spell out in terms of those agreements that they will conform to all the tax legislation, the basic conditions of employment and all other legislation in the country that is applicable. So we don't necessarily see that as an issue. And then perhaps I think the last issue was that of what we suggest in terms of regulation. I'm not suggesting that we put in any new regulations. What I'm suggesting is that the if there are people that are operating in an unscrupulous manner, then the department should be given the wherewithal to audit, to check, and to make sure that those businesses operating as labour brokers are doing so correctly. You know, it seems to me to be pointless to take the approach of throwing out the baby with the bathwater when there are appearing two distinct arguments and two distinct groups of people within who operate within this environment of as what we loosely term the labour brokers. There are the very skilled people, and there are people of lesser skills and unskilled people, and I think we need to address that issue and apply our minds to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Have you answered all the questions?
If I've left any out, please excuse me. That was rather a long list.
Okay.
So if I could just repeat my question. You did answer quite a number of them. Thank you very much. My question was just in terms of dispute resolution. Because it's one of the things that's used to say to us, no, labour brokering can't work and shouldn't work and should be outlawed, is because there isn't a good mechanism for dispute resolution.
Okay. Thank you for that, and my apologies. We have a very clear rule in our business, and that is we separate, and this is from good HR practice, we separate negotiating terms and conditions of employment with the individual, that is left up to their broker, and performance. So our project managers are all entitled to deal with the individual's performance on the job based on that individual's job description. So every person on a project gets a job description. He has an appraisal based on that, on his performance, and that is dealt with both with our project manager and then, if necessary, with his employer, the labour broker. If there are areas around discipline, the rule is even more simple. If such an event occurs, we immediately contact the broker, and should there be an investigation required, we would assist the broker, but the broker, as the individual's employer, then has all rights and all duties to conduct the disciplinary hearing, exact the sanction, and do whatever he feels is necessary in terms of that individual. The only time we would get involved is if we were then doing a job for a client, and a client has a view on a person's performance, it may then become a three-way discussion. But effectively, the rules are simple. You discipline your own employees. The project manager simply controls the costs, time, and performance of the project.
Honorable Chairperson?
Look, it's quite confusing. I should think I ask who is the employer in this relationship. Who had employed? Who've got the right to discipline? Who will have the right to dispute? We ask also the bargaining rights of individuals. Who do they bargain with? I'm working in your company with Tulas. Tulas, nice here next to me, is the employer of the company where you have sold me to. Then Tulas got 500 rand increase, and we are doing the same job with Tulas. But because I'm from a labor broker, I still earn 1,500 because I'm not employed by that company. That company didn't employ me. They employed a labor broker. So that one you don't answer. Who is the employer? Who take all necessary steps as per the Labor Relations Act, Basic Condition of Employment Act? Who do that? Are those people having any right to belong to the union? I think that's what Comrade Honorable Tulas asked. You had never answered such questions. We are also saying when there's a disciplinary procedures which are supposed to take place, who should actually, in this sense, discipline? Because I'm not working for you, I'm working for another man. this man says you are useless, and the labor broker come and say, yes, you are useless because my client said you are useless, and they dismiss me. Is that the right of the worker? And where this worker should go in that incident? Because the working condition of employment with the labor broker is not saying when you've got a problem in the company where you are working, you will be disciplined by me. They say that my client will discipline you. And the clients are doing as they want. They dismiss as they wish. Those people work overtime which is not paid. They are discriminated in the workplace where they are working. I should think that's where we move that. Let's do away with labor brokers. Let's employ people in the workplaces where they are working. Why that company cannot employ those people? Because they need that service of those workers every day working there for them. We are not clarifying that. That's what we want to understand. Why those people cannot be employed by those employers? Why should be a labor broker? I'm telling you that some companies, when we are running a research as what's happening, they said, look, we want people who are very flexible. Labor brokers are very flexible. When you say a person should work till 5 o'clock, you just tell the labor broker that I want this to be done by 6 o'clock. How they do it is not the worry of the owner of that company. It's the worry of the labor broker. And those people are being abused because they will work overtime which is unpaid. And they don't have similar benefits as the permanent employees of that company. So as a result, they are so discriminated. And they are treated like nothing in those companies. They are told, go there, come there, which the workers in that establishment cannot do. Which is clearly regulated with them. The employers are saying, we don't want to go through disciplinary inquiries. That's why we are very serious to understand the disciplinary part of it and dispute and bargaining part of it. So those are the humiliation those people are facing. That's why we are saying, let's do away with it because it doesn't help. It's actual fact taking us back to slavery. That we have sold my labor very cheap and I'm getting nothing and you are becoming rich out of me. So we understand that all labor brokers want to do away with labor brokerage because that's where they make a hell of a money from. I know I'm from a labor movement. I took some security from Prestige Security. We are paying $30,000 to the labor broker. One day I realized that, but these people are earning less than 500 rand. And I'm paying $30,000 to them. And I said, withdraw your labor, we'll have to employ you here. No benefits, nothing. Those who are securities, they don't even have guns. They're standing there without anything. They can be killed at any time. They're not insured. They've got nothing. When they retire, they've got no pension, no nothing. And in the places where those people are working, there are benefits. When they go on pension, they've got all the provident fund and everything. The labor brokerage people doesn't have anything. And any company can say that it must prove that. So what we are saying is that we cannot afford to see people taking back to slavery. We cannot afford in this democratic dispensation that our people are being enslaved again. Thank you very much.
Can we answer the question?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm Eric Nyagamba from the NCA. Just to, on this dispute, I just want to be clear. I then say, you as the primary employer, where the labor broker placed employees in your employ, when it comes to matters of discipline, you conduct investigations in relation to the allegations. After you have done that, as a primary employer, you give it over to the labor broker to conduct the actual disciplinary processes. I think I that one you to clear me on that. The last one, sir, is this argument
that you enter between yourself and the individual labor broker. I think it's the agreement called a service agreement between you and your client. Is it true that one of the clauses in the service agreement, there's a clause that says you will utilize the services of the employee that has been provided by the labor broker? And if you no longer require those services, then the labor broker will take this individual. I just wanted clarity on those, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyakemba. Mr. Armstrong, it's, I think these questions are very clear. It's like who determines the wages of the workers? Is it you? Is it the labor broker? Who does have a final word on those salaries? And what happens when you are no longer satisfied with the services of the people that are working for you, the people that you have been given by the labor broker? What happens? Who decides? Who is consulted? You are saying that workers that you have employed through the labor broker are very happy to work for labor broker. They're not interested. Now, I imagine a situation where I sit with my employer and then be asked, are you okay with this system? And say straight to my employer that no, I'm not okay. I don't favor this system. Now, the relations between these workers who are provided through labor brokers and these two people, this labor broker and the third party, the research and our own experiences is telling us that those relationships are of a slave master and a slave relationship. Let's assume that you are saying the workers are okay with this system. Why don't you get workers directly and cut this third person? I heard that you referred to the scarce skills. And that argument was countered. Why don't you go directly? Why don't you say, instead of saying the labor department must go for those people who are not adhering to the law, why don't you say the labor department must assist or say in getting those skills for you or getting those skills for you instead of that third person? Why is it necessary that there should be that middleman? Thank you.
Madam Chairperson, if I can respond quite briefly, I think the first point to be made is that in our view we agree with you that there is this very distinct difference between people with skills and a high earning potential and their ability to negotiate rates, conditions of employment, as opposed to unskilled people. I think that's a given. We know that. I think that happens right throughout the economy. And unfortunately, I'm only qualified to speak on the skilled people. But nevertheless, I think the first question relates to how a rate is determined. Effectively, what we would do as an employer, we would approach a labor broker when we are looking to fill a position on a project. And we would request CVs from them. They would send us what they regard to be suitable CVs. We would interview those candidates. When we've selected the candidate that we prefer, we would inform the broker that this is the candidate. We would then enter into a process of a rate negotiation with the broker, not the individual. So the broker then proposes a rate, and we have a system that we go through. Sometimes we are required to consult with our end client as to the suitability or not of that rate. Once the rate is agreed, the broker then communicates the person's actual salary package to the individual. We don't get involved in that at all. That's the way it works in our business. Then as to the question of disciplining, should an incident take place, it will be generally reported either to the project manager or possibly even to the labor broker. Our understanding of the law is that only your employer may discipline you. But on that basis, depending on what it is, and bearing in mind it could be misconduct, it could be a performance issue, it could be a design defect, it could be many different things. And that is the reason why an investigation is done. An investigation is done in terms of all best labor practice. We have HR policies that cover this kind of thing. And all we are saying is that the ultimate disciplining of the individual then rests with his employer, the labor broker, or the temporary employment service provider. Our role then, and it could be the role of the end client, is to assist in that investigation, disciplinary procedure, whatever name you want to put to it, to ensure that the person is fairly treated. So in our view, it remains an issue for very skilled people that effectively they find it difficult to operate as independent contractors, because typically they are engaged in one project and one project only. So therefore they are not able to get around a lot of the tax restrictions which say that you have to have at least 80% of your income, at least you've got to be able to split up your income from various sources. So we don't want to see people trying to circumvent the tax legislation. So it makes it very difficult for us as a business to employ a person with a particular skill. Now the best example I can give you of that is there are individuals known as shaft planners. These are people that are skilled in the planning that goes around the sinking of a mine shaft. That is their very, very specific job. Now, as you can imagine, we don't build a mine in this country every day. Gencore might be building one today, Anglo American might be building one tomorrow. And effectively, these are the people that you employ for the job, whether you are employing them for Anglo American or you are employing them for Gencore. So that is where the flexibility element comes in. And the best way for that person to be employed would perhaps be for him to work as an independent, but the tax laws don't allow him to do that. So effectively what he does is he goes to a labor broker, and the labor broker then, once he finishes one shaft planning job, will find him the next shaft planning job. And that might be in Turkey, it might be in China, it might be in India. And these are the levels of skills that I'm trying to talk about, and I think that is what we need to do. I, as an individual, and I'm talking in my individual capacity, accept that there are some practices that go on that we are not happy with. I've used domestic labor service providers, which I will never use again, simply for that reason. They charge you a fee, and they take a massive fee off the individual, and the individual at the end of the day goes home with nothing. That's a fact. I'm not here to argue that. I'm here to simply state that when one is debating these issues, it's very easy to get emotional. But the bottom line for me is that we need to consider all the options and this entire spectrum of what we have. We have individuals that do not want to be full-time employees of our company simply because we cannot keep them working on the kind of projects that they want to be involved with every day. When a project comes to an end after 2 or 3 years, they look for the next most exciting opportunity for them. That's how they work. That's why they get up in the morning. So, you know, the issues I think are clear, and it's very easy to cloud them with emotion. I think what we need to look for here are practical, workable solutions. I hope that's answered the question.
Thank you, Mr. Armstrong. That was Mr. Armstrong from Consulting Engineers and Project Managers. We are going to go to the second presentation of today. It's going to be provided by staff attack
company by Mr. S. Bosa and Mr. J.
Please, over to you.
Madam Chairperson, we thank you for the opportunity. The company you refer to is called referring to systems. Mr. Reuters and myself are presenting the install for a click. Being within the industry for 10 years, Madam Chairperson, it's our submission that we've got a tremendous complexity within the industry. Our concern is that we're going to label labor broking, which in most of the cases help with the flexibility of the need within the labor industry, and going to throw this to a bigger dam we control will just further deplete. And I trust that you will, during the course of today, hear a lot of submissions regarding why labor breaking should be taking place or not. But myself and Mr. Reuters are not here today to really enhance you with why. We rather would like you to provide with the solution, which we believe lies in the system. So let me just take you through a few slides and give you some details, and we'd like to also at the end of the day help you with a few questions afterwards. The challenge within the temporary employment services is that obviously we've got this profit versus admin input. The labor brokers at this moment in time is profit driven. What actually happens is that you'll find that the less inputs that you have, any business works on the principle of profit. So the less input you have, the greater your output could be in terms of profit. But the problem with what lies here is that we, at the end of the day, get into a situation where important inputs within the labor industry is obviously admin. So labor brokers tend not to spend money on administration. And if you don't have a system, you're heading for a problem. Second thing we'd like to just mention to you is the issue in terms of the wage challenge. And this is the big problem within our industry currently. The customer is sitting back, waiting for the labor brokers to come with the best offer on the table, normally resulting in a tremendous low wage. So what I'm saying, Madam Commissioner, we rather would see the customer getting much more involved, determining up front what he or she is going to offer for X position. For example, within the metal industry, we've got a definite rate set down, but outside the industry, let's go and take a look at what the customer's offering at the end of the day on the table, and through a system, have a definite wage rate for a X category. The other problem also, in which will not fall away if you take labor brokerage away, is the fact that if you are working with temporary employment, measurement of timekeeping is very complex. You'll find that in certain circumstances, a gentleman will be working, say for example, 3 days at X customer and say 2 days at the following customer. To the extent that if that administration is not being done properly, payment to the employee is wrong, and that creates a distrust factor, which doesn't necessarily mean it will fall away if it's been done by the customer, which got other focuses also in terms of his business and focusing on the core elements. In terms of statute compliance, it's very important to note that to study a wage bill, for example, the previous gentleman mentioned a tremendous turnover. But to study that and to determine an audit with regards to are we complying is quite difficult. And again, if you do not have a system, it creates a problem. Joe, I don't know if you want to say something about the employment equity targets.
I just want to say there that it creates also the problem that we want to circumvent by the use of labour brokers the employment equity targets, and by having a proper system in place, it will just support, in fact, it will provide additional information, because what our platform provides, what you can't measure, you can't manage, and we would love to, with this, to provide that kind of platform that we will also enforce other statutory compliance that is required by labour brokers as well.
Also very important, a previous lady, honourable lady, mentioned that benefits in terms of employees. Why do brokers not provide this? Madam Commissioner, again, if an employer in the fullest length would have provided benefits to an employee only being there for X period, might result in a situation where any underwriter of any insurance company, for example, still can't determine what is the risk involved to issue a premium to actually assist the people. So that's why, again, if we have a system in place that could measure this, we are in a position to supply these people with the foundations to actually start developing and constructing an instrument that could be utilized within the industry. Also, in terms of decent work opportunities, you'll find within our industry we've challenged with the fact that people can't borrow money, etc. And again, it's the fact that there's no knowledge of what is happening within our, in our industry, because you'll find when you deep within our industry, you'll find that that's actually a lot of sustainability involved in the long term. As the previous speaker has mentioned, that some of the employees finish with a project and they continue with a new product, with a new challenge. And if it can't be measured, at the end of the day, it creates again a problem in terms of decent work opportunities, bank not being able to help because they don't know what's happening within our industry. So what we're trying to say is that if we are going to try and manage employees by just providing the traditional system whereby you add a manager to manage 30 people or a supervisor to manage 30 people, you are not going to get far, because we depend on people to regulate, we depend on people to get control, discipline and continuity in terms of people coming and going will always be there. So that's why we say no. Rather get a system in place, especially for volumes, get the set rules down for blueprints that will ensure prescribed outcome. And very important, what is actually the information available about our sector? And you'll find that it's actually very, very frightening. So that's why if we have a system, you'll be in a position to, at the end of the day, collect this information and then obviously conclude effective management. Areas of control that we just needed is recruitment. Our system provides that in full. 15-step process, employee contracts, that's very important. Every employee should be entitled in terms of contract. Rate of pay, can I just stop there for a while, is that we believe that the customer must set down the specific rate and that the broker then needs to apply or provide a quotation in terms of that rate which has been set down. Health and safety is also a very important factor that can't just be left aside. Every customer's got a different set of rules, a different challenge with regards to health and safety, so participation in terms of the labour broker should also be considered there. then the basis in terms of trust is the hour administration or the wage administration that needs to be done properly. Due to the flexibility, it always creates a problem, so that's why that administration also important. And then very important, colleague of or a gentleman here at the back mentioned that the ending of contracts should be facilitated through a definite process. And that's why let's provide them a system which is a blueprint in facilitating that process. Otherwise, we're going to just run around in a circle. Then obviously get the client to provide much more responsibility by having access to this information, what the broker is actually doing. And then obviously comply in terms of employment equity, getting away from the fact that most of the customers hide behind the employment equity planning by structuring it through a labour broker. So what we're saying is that the solution lies with a basis on the internet whereby the employee, the temporary employment services, the client, as well as the Department of Labour has access in terms of what's happening within the industry. We're saying that let's try and get this sector administrated first before we call upon banning it. Because I believe the fact that we do not have information on it creates a bigger problem. And throwing it back to a bigger sea will not really provide the solution for the employee. Here's an opportunity. On a micro scale, I believe the gentleman has forwarded some stats on our industry where around about 900,000 people are involved, employees involved in our industry. That's a much more controllable scenario than, for example, how are you going to control, I think there's 16 million workable or people that are able to work. Let's rather get control over this industry. Let's get rid of the concept of slavery, as been mentioned before, through definite blueprint systems. And how we see it is as follows. The client register on the system, SDM stands for Staff Data Management System. He declared the work type, the rate. That's very important. He must declare, I, customer, I'm looking for a forklift driver. I don't have a bargaining unit within my industry. Although I've sat down with my unions, with my representatives, and we have bargained on this amount as the applicable amount payable to the forklift driver. That rate is then available for the broker, which is also registered on the system, which can then tender, taking into account all statutory requirements, for example, leave pay, sick leave pay, definite formulas on those, UIF, SDM, workman's compensation, given all of the brokers the same basis in terms of this, if I apply as a broker or Mr. Y apply as a labour broker in terms of doing services at X customer, we'll all have the same basis to work on. And then only the admin fee will be added so that we can get the sustainability and transparency within the industry. Then obviously the client must have info on the management reports through the system, Staff Data Management System, whereby he then can intervene if there should be any practices which is outside the boundaries of LRA or basic conditions of employment. He needs also then to confirm the temporary employment services status. Should there be any external activities, for example, when disciplinary actions is being conducted, and these, for example, exploitations in terms of dismissals, etc., where that could be brought to the foreground and under investigation, so that the employee or the customer could also then be informed. But again, madam, I need to bring it to your attention. If we remove a labour broker from the system due to XYZ reasons, who is actually suffering the worst in terms of replacing that employee now to a new employer or to a new broker? For that period, fear prevails and there's a lot of problems. But if you have a system where the rates are being set down it's a matter of continuing with a new choice that the client could execute at any given moment in time. And then obviously the client also needs to agree to an annual audit, which is compulsory. Then when we get to the labor broker, in the case, ma'am, we say a labor broker is executing unlawful practices and the customer discovers that. In that specific period, there will be a dispute in terms of what has been paid by the customer or to the employee at any given moment in time. And the employee is for a period until it's been resolved without a definite income in terms of going to a next labor broker, which the customer might execute at any given moment in time. There's, for example, a ruling within the broking industry. If a labor broker takes over from another labor broker, there's a placement fee charged to the client, which the client not normally want to pay. And what happens then is the client say, labor broker 1, please take your people, remove them. Labor broker 2, please bring in new employees and continue. That is a practice that needs to stop, ma'am. And that's why we say, by having a system, you'll have a record online available then to that employee so that continuity of work will sustain. That's what I'm trying to say, ma'am. The Temporary Employment Services will then register itself also on the system. They'll recruit the employees on a national register. In other words, Department of Labor will at any given moment in time know who is recruited where at which brokerage. For example, traceability in terms of unemployment fund is now suddenly possible. A lot of other possibilities could arise by just having a system with central databases whereby we could, at the end of the day, administrate. We then will be able to deliver to the client based on work type and rate calculation on SDM. We administrate the employees also through the SDM system. What we say there is time and attendance, issuing of clothing, PPE, and that is actually being done and complied with in full. Then as well, manage the employees through the SDM system in terms of management reports. I specifically would like here to mention that we prefer or we submit that a definite process, for example, in when an employee stops at any given contract should be in place and as well documented on a national system so that everyone knows what actually happened to that specific individual. So that we can start tracing what and why is work stopping with XYZ individuals and actually empowering the Department of Labor to execute plans to eliminate those factors that stop work opportunities. Then obviously a temporary employment service agent will be scored, and if it's not scored in terms of a certain level, he or she will lose his right then to operate within the industry. And obviously also agree to an annual report. So Madam Commissioner, here's a present figure that I'd just like to submit to you, where we've got the employees going through to the labour brokers, where we've got a national registry for those brokers, obviously administrated through a system. We would like to believe our system is there through our 10 years of experience, providing them a definite blueprint in terms of what is going to happen with that specific individual, to resolve then that labour laws will be followed, benefits in terms of employees will be sorted, statutory compliance in terms of UIF, SDL site tax, bargaining councils, basic conditions of employment, minimum wages is being pulled through, and we get to a situation where we on a small scale acknowledge the fact that we've got flexibility within our labour industry, and instead of throwing this back to the bigger sea, let's rather get control, knowledge, through a system to, at the end of the day, get to a point where we can make further decisions. Why staff data management? I think, Madam Commissioner, if I understand the correspondence in the media, I understand that this is very important for government and that the time frame is a problem. Being there, done that, running with the systems actively within our industry for the past 4 years, customers excited about the control it actually brings them, employees being happy because of them having control, even to the scale where on-site, by touching a screen, they can see the hours for the current period and the previous period, thus getting the issue in terms of trust in place immediately with the complexity that comes with it. Very important. Then also important to note that we are in partnership with PwC, the auditing firm, also rolling out to some public entities where they have identified ourselves as a solution going forward. So again, already we're on a level that could provide immediate effect and impact within the industry, knowing that there is obviously a process that needs to be followed to make sure that we've got all the governance that we require within the system to achieve your objectives at the end of the day. Our experience in the industry in terms of understanding labour broking, we are not as big as the previous brokers have submitted. We've got around about 4,200 employees, but yeah, we are in the industry for in excess of 10 years. Then obviously our system is employee and client driven. The client actually through the system got more control and more responsibility by having the information. Then obviously we are passionate to get this industry right now. It's true that what's happening currently within our industry, we're not happy with what is happening, but we are convinced by just throwing this problem to the bigger sea will not really provide the solution for the employee in the temporary environment or temporary need within our labour force. Thank you, madam.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Questions? Honorable Belma?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your presentation. In your case, who is the employer? If there's a dispute in the workplace and it is taken to CCMA, for example, who is the employer? Who goes to CCMA in your case? Would it be your company or would it be the employer? Just that clarity. Thank you.
Madam Chairperson, we ultimately as labour brokers are the employer to the fullest length. And why I say the fullest length is to emphasise that we are responsible for those employees. We can't go to the extent where we say, but my client feels there's a problem. And that's why we believe there should be a definite process, especially in the outsource scenario where we provide a definite guideline, a definite process that needs to be followed before an employee will be dismissed or is considered to be disciplined along the way so that we can comply to basic conditions of employment in full. So yes, the labour broker is the employer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ian Otis, I want to just inquire a little bit about the system. Are you proposing that this kind of a system, which I assume is a software-based solution, is used now by the Labour Department to control all labour broking in the country through such a system? If that is the case, I have a couple of questions. The first one is, if you have unskilled workers, do unskilled workers understand such a complex system, and are they able to trust in this kind of a system as people who perhaps are partially literate or whatever? And then secondly, you have labor brokers in existence today who are much smaller than yourselves, who have not the resources perhaps to run such a complex system. How do you propose that we deal with small brokers? I mean, we have brokers in one of the presentations that was given to us some weeks ago, where you have one guy with a cell phone who's acting as a labor broker and recruiting rural unskilled people and delivering them to farms and this sort of thing. How do we regulate that kind of behavior? Are you saying that we should push those people out of business because they won't be able to conform to the system if we legislate that such a system is required by all labor brokers? How do we deal with the bottom end of the scale, if you understand?
Well, thank you very much. It's a very relevant question. We are saying that broker, which is small, operating from cell phone, still needs to have some sort of system to ensure that the employee is being paid right, that all statutory compliance is being met. Yes, the technology that we're utilizing, maybe we could enhance or put in place, say, another department which could actually assist with capturing of these information, etc. I don't know how we can go about that. But what I'm trying to say is that I'm concerned if you say that that broker operating from his cell phone is trying to manage the employee correctly, and also what is that client submission in terms of his role that he plays to make sure that that employee is being treated to the fullest length. So what I'm saying is I don't want the smaller broker not to be included. In fact, I think this is a great opportunity for them, all making all playgrounds level, for them to also participate to the extent where they, on an operational basis, could add value in terms of their admin fee. But obviously, we need to adhere to some sort of system whereby we can guarantee the employee is safe and that all statutory compliance are being met in full. It's actually those brokers that might be, and please, I'm extending myself to dangerous grounds here, but it might be that there's a more tendency for those brokers to actually do it incorrectly, and where the employee might be illiterate, where they are more exposed to this type of behavior of misusage of brokers as well as customers, exploitation of that employee.
Thank you, Mr. Ad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Botha, in your first slide of your suggested systems as a solution to this problem, you've raised the fact that this industry is profit-driven. Yes. Without basically unpacking that, how much is it that gets charged when you place a person as a broker to an employer? Whether you can give us in percentage terms, because I think we have a serious problem in terms of the amounts get paid to you as a broker and the actual amounts that get paid to the worker. Secondly, you made reference to the compliance with the statutory provisions. I'm battling to really understand how would a broker, not being on the shop floor, can act as an employer in terms of complying with Labor Relations Act, basic conditions of employment. You've also made mention of the Employment Equity Act. If you are not the actual employer on the shop floor, responsible for the entire workforce, how do you then comply with such statutory provisions? Is this not a way of basically circumventing, you know, the intentions of government in terms of the transformation? Recently we've heard from the Department of Labor that the transformation is actually not taking place at all. Could this system of brokerage not also playing a role in retarding the process of transformation, because you are responsible to place people that come before you, but you are not responsible for the total complement of the workforce in a particular workplace, and yet you tell us that you also are responsible for the compliance with the statutory provisions. Really, this doesn't make a lot of comprehension in our minds. If you could clarify this, and then the best thing for us to can be able to understand and follow your suggestion is when you are open and honest in terms of what actually obtains. Because to come here and paint a glory picture, you are bringing solutions without first acknowledging the depth of the problem, as it has been told by a number of people via a number of channels to this parliament. Thank you.
Mr. Rapota?
Madam Chairperson, thank you, Honourable Sir. It's very relevant questions that you're asking. Profit within the industry, sir, I'd just like to elaborate on the following, is that depending on operational requirements, there's a percentage that's normally levied on total cost to salary. In the past, a brokerage might come and offer a client X for a forklift driver. And another labor broker, for example, let's use figures. We would offer 20 rand per hour for a forklift driver, counterbalance forklift driver. And the following labor broker will offer 5 or 10 rand for that matter. But invoicing the client still at, say, 25 rand, whatever might be the case, inclusive of all statutory requirements. So what we're saying is that we need to, because of the complexity within Labor Relations Act, the rulings with regards to the minimum wages, let's set down those rules that the customer then needs to adhere and publish it in terms of his negotiations either with the shop stewards or with whoever he negotiates the rates with on an annual basis. It might be set down by a bargaining unit, and then enforce the compliance of that, making available to the broker that he or she, this is the cost of salaries, and that admin fee could be added in terms of the operational requirement that needs to be delivered. For example, you might have in a production environment where shift workers is applicable. If that lady or gentleman, for whatever reason, could not come through on their shift allocated to them, that customer might be in a predicament in terms of closing down a machine, losing productivity, and the end is that customer might losing some business, etc., and again, sustainability. So that's where the broker could come in, and in terms of an administration fee, provide them those additional work that needs to be supplied. So, yes, profit-wise, sir, it depends on operational requirements, but it could, in terms of volume, be around about 4%, going up to anything to 15-20% within my industry, and I'm talking here for my industry as a whole, well, for my sector that I'm operating, which is mainly production as well as road freight. To answer your last question regarding statutory compliance, why can't a broker participate within employment equity as we are currently doing it very successfully, whereby we get all our employees from floor level? Within our industry, for example, we've got a workers' forum. We elect employees. Employees, through a structure, report any problems. So, and if you can't do this if you don't have a system and if it's been controlled properly. So, yes, you're quite right that our industry, there's a lot of bad, a lot of people in our industry which is exploiting the employee to the fullest thing. But if it could be controlled, if you have a system, you'd be in a position where I also need to submit to Department of Labor my Employment Equity Act. Why am I not being rubbed over my fingers? You are not doing your job right. Why do I not also get the hiding if there's a security issue or a health and safety issue? So what I'm saying is that through a system, we'll be in a situation whereby we could participate to the extent where we are a full employer to the fullest length, and we actually have the customer to also regulate and make sure that we do comply with that. If we're just going to throw this to the bigger pool, I'm again very concerned that we are not going to get control. Yes, and our system is operating within 4 years within our industry, and pity I can't have some of our customers here today just to confirm that they're very happy with regards to the control that they actually have over employees not directly working for themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Porta. Honorable Mia Kemba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your presentation, you stated that you have, I think, approximately 4,200 employees. The definition of an employee, I think that becomes irrelevant, because the definition of employee is any person who assists in conducting a business. Now, in your case, you are a labor broker, you are not in a specific industry. How does these 4,200 employees assist you in conducting your business? That's the first question. The second question is you are all keep on mentioning the customer. Obviously, it's your customer. Am I correct to say I can only become your customer if I have a workplace, and then you have these 420 whom you call as employees but not having a workplace? So in an event where I want you to provide me with personnel, then I will become your client. I just want you to clarify whether what I'm saying is correct. Lastly, the workplace itself. The workplace, in terms of the definitions of the Labor Relations Act, is a place where employees who are employed by an employer work. Now, if then you will say you've got 4,200, but you supply this 4,200 to me, does my workplace now become your workplace? I'm saying I understood your presentation, but the bottom that I'm trying to raise here, there is some contradictions or areas that I could not understand. Thank you.
What do you, Mr. Porter?
Madam Chairperson, yes, very relevant, sir. There's always an issue in terms of who's the employer and who's the employee. So our understanding is that I am the employer to the fullest length. I'm responsible for this employee. I take it for account that this employee, let me just go one phrase back, because of unemployment within our industry, it is the tendency of the employer, let's exclude the labor broker, it is the tendency of the employer to gather the employee that's standing in front of his gate, begging him for work. That is wrong. My value add as an employer is to facilitate that need to the extent where compliance in terms of statutory regulations and a sense of belonging is still in place. If we are going to leave temporary employment to the bigger employment gap or employer corps that's looking for employment outside there, I am convinced that we will be in a position where those employees will, even in a greater sense, be exploited. So what I'm trying to say is that I am the employer, it's my employee being placed at the customer, where the customer provides the supervision and control of the daily task at hand, administrating that to the fullest length. answer your second question of, unfortunately, the workplace, it is at the customer. I think my first expression clarifies that a little bit more. It's my employee at the customer under the control of the customer, control and supervision. Madam Chairperson, I believe I've answered that.
Well, law.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I would like to refer to what Mr. Boota as well as Mr. Armstrong alluded to earlier on, whilst both of them were doing the presentation. And they mentioned the word insufficient control. My question is, you mentioned insufficient control from the side of the department. In the event, if there are insufficient control, what methodology do you suggest should be used to close these gaps, if detected? And bearing in mind capacity constraints is also an issue, especially in terms of the inspectors. Thank you.
Honourable Sir, it's our submission that exactly that. You know, we can't continue out with the debate where we say, look here, we're going to get inspectors in place and we're going to enforce control within the industry, etc. We say no. We say utilize a system whereby everyone is regulated, a national database, where everyone is on the system. We can immediately identify that there's a provision, provided that all the audit processes are in place, and that the employee complies, or the employer complies in the sense of participating within the system. We'll immediately identify the brokers out of line, employees being unfairly treated, and we'll be in a position to actually now be much more in control within this sector than ever before because of utilizing the system. Try and think to roll out this system nationally for all industries, full-time employers, at the temporary employment service industry, it's going to be a nightmare. But if we only do it within the sector, we get control. There's a possibility that we can even the gap that there might be within the total Department of Labour fulfill that functionality and utilising the sector as the breeding grounds in getting systems to get control of exploitations of employees. Because if you manage them on the temporary employment services, or if you manage them just as fulfilling a function in a full-time situation, delivering a temporary function, exploitation there will be if it's not controlled through a system. That's why we strongly believe, gentlemen, ladies, that we need to take a look at a system consolidating the information within the industry and making sure that regulation takes place accordingly.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Honorable Matisha, your hand was up.
No, thanks, Chair. You see, we keep on coming back to this point because I don't think there is, you know, a proper explanation. Today in South Africa, we say that there are very serious shortages of skills. Which then says that the employer, yes, understand the features and so on, but the employer has been called upon to contribute in the development of skills in the country. Then what happens in that instance? Who then comes in? If you could just explain that. And again, given what has been, you know, happening in the country, and what will be happening, a yearly issue. The issue of the benefits of the workers. You know, the issue of health and safety. The workers get injured at the workplace. What then becomes your role? Is it the a primary employer, and of course we've got to go into that, where do you put yourself? Is it the employer or your client, as you put it, at the workplace there that actually comes in to handle the issue, or are you called upon to come in and handle that particular area? So the issue of the, you know, salary increments, etc., etc., your client, does your client, you know, talk to you, do you agree at a particular level, or the issues that face the workers on a daily basis, handled at the particular level without you coming in, etc., etc.? What happens?
Thank you, Matisha. Mr. Bosa, please.
Madam Chairperson, very relevant question, sir. And I think the issue of skills development, when you talk up to an employer that needs to spend time, effort and money to conduct skills development, which is not related to a full-time period, you'll find that they'll be reluctant to participate in assisting that employee fulfilling a temporary position. And I believe that the temporary employment service industry is actually a good forum which the Department of Labor could utilize, where they can register themselves, obtain skills, maybe with the excess funds available within the skills development system, and by doing so, actually empowering that employee to be in a position to actually obtain a full-time position through the skills that he could have obtained through the labor broker. So skills development, sir, I would believe could actually be facilitated much more to the effect that it was attended to at the end of the day. In terms of employee benefits, yes, it's true, sir. In the past, labor brokers bid to the customer and the customer just sat back and waited for the broker that brought the best price on the table. The client is forcing the industry where it is now. The client accepted the rate that the broker offered. The client said, I am happy with not paying benefits to this specific employee. What guarantees is there that if that gentleman or lady that's in my employment go to that employer, will actually be in a position where he or she could actually get that benefit? I foresee that in a market where a lot of labor is available, exploitation will just continue. Rather have it within our industry, which is much more controllable in terms of the number versus the total workforce available, and get control over it to the extent where we could actually add value to those employees that we currently believe are participating in a slavery environment. Sir, and I've neglected the last question. Did I answer your questions, Madam Chairperson?
Any more questions? Honorable Charlie?
I want to go back to the first question, which was the answer. I don't know how. What is the problem in dealing directly with the work seat? And I'll quickly help you to answer. The question is that, is what you have just said now, that your company is a profit driven. That is the problem. Your company is profit driven. And if it's profit driven, as you have confessed, it must get a slave. Yes. Because that slave labor is cheap labor. It cannot be otherwise. And that cheap labor you will find it through the labor brokers. You'll find through the labor brokers. Labor brokers, I'm sure they are not there to help the workers. They are not there to help the employers. They are there to exploit these workers, to get to make super profit out of these workers. Because they are forced to sell their labor power for peanuts. Because if they don't accept this, they are not going to get jobs. They will sleep without them. My colleague, he said it's a slave system. It's true, 21st century slave system. Which cannot be mended. In my opinion, it must be destroyed completely. This parliament must do everything possible to get off this slave system. Because you also have just told us about the workers' forum. I'm an old campaigner in the trade movement. I come with the trade movement from the 50s. Sometime in the 50s, there was they introduced something which they called workers' forum. I don't know if it was BN Commission or who introduced this workers' forum. It was rejected by workers. Because it was not trade union in a classical sense of the trade union. It was bringing this slave system we talk about through the back door. And we rejected it, didn't we? Now, this system we're talking about, this due respect, is smuggling this through the back door. I don't think it will be proper to accept this as it is. But I'm still interested, in your opinion, not because of what I said, to know why is it a problem to deal with the work seeker directly. Because I think all this revolves around work seeker who is being avoided to deal with. So you must get somebody to deal with. Because you have 500 rand to pay me. And that labor broker comes to me. He says, I'll give you 100 rand. Take the rest. That's exactly what we are fighting. But I would like this question.
Thank you, Honorable Chati. Mr. Paul?
Madam Chairperson, very relevant questions being asked. So my customer, he is also profit driven. I just want to start off by saying it. Let's exclude the labor broker. What guarantee is there with 70 employees standing at his gate, begging him when he drives in to secure a job at a decent rate? What we're saying, the value that we're adding, Madam Chairperson, is to actually to come in and say, no, let's regulate this industry whereby all temporary employment should be put through the process where we've got control. And what I'm trying to say, sir, is that we are proposing that the issue of profits should be managed to the extent where the there's a set rule of what is the cost for any given employee at a specific task at hand. I'm going to use the example for forklift driver again. A forklift driver within a warehouse normally falls within the NBCRFI, the Road Bargaining Council. There's a definite rate for that specific gentleman that needs to be paid. Let's set that rule down, fix on a system that that is the rate that you are going to pay that gentleman and or lady executing that task. And by doing so, actually helping exploitation to be removed. That's the value that we would like to add in the industry, sir. And now try to govern the employer where the employees are standing at the front of his gate, not exploiting that lady or gentleman. I have learned, sir, and I'm still a young man, don't have the knowledge that you have, but I've learned that they will take the chance to exploit that lady or gentleman, and that must stop. And we suggest that we take the system, we've got a controllable environment, much more than in the past, to actually add value to that lady or to that gentleman to the fullest length. And I acknowledge where you come from, so I agree with you in full. We must really think about this. And by just excluding the labour broker is, I don't think, the answer. Let's rather regulate it through a system. To say regulate is a big word. We really need to have control, Madam Chairperson, and a system like we've got, I believe, is the answer going forward, providing value for that lady or gentleman in sustaining work opportunities, even in a flexible environment.
Thank you, Mr. Botha. Is it a follow-up, Mr. Connor? Please. I'm noting the two hands at the back.
Madam Chair, as a follow-up, I think Mr. Botha is not basically answering this question on employer clearly. Let us pose it in this fashion. Do you understand, sir, the definition of an employer in terms of the Labour Relations Act? If so, what you are pleading for, is it not in contravention of that law? Because you don't own means of production. And therefore, if you say you want to be seen as an employer, to us, when we look straight in that definition, that's direct opposition of what is prescribed in that piece of legislation. But secondly, why must government, through the Department of Labour, be overstretched to monitor the enforcement of laws by the actual employer who owns means of production, and over and above, monitor people who are responsible for the placement of job seekers to employment? Because if you were talking about you being a placement agency, it's a different matter altogether. But once you now want to act as an employer, in this instance, labor brokers are seen as being employers, as you have yourself said, that you are responsible wholly for this employer. Why must the state be required to be overstretched in this manner? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairperson, when it comes to control and who's the employer and who's the employee, my business, sir, is to find work for my people, to sustain that work, and to make sure that they are being treated, having decent work opportunities. That is my job opportunity that I have. That is the work environment, the business need that I fulfill at the end of the day. So I am employing employing employees to get that opportunity better than would have been the normal circumstances where that employee is standing in front of a gate of any other employer. So the value add that we provide in terms of providing labour, Department of Labour, is by saying let's rather control the sector again through a system so that we could be enable Department of Labour to know exactly what's happening and actually having control within the system. I again submit, sir, that I'm strongly of the belief that if we are not going to do that, we're going to be in a position where we lose the opportunity to govern a specific sector, and where the problem could actually multiply by having that in the hands of the normal employer. There's a lot of work available. If there's a lot of supply, the trend is demand is low in terms of offering. And so we're talking about people here. And that's why I don't want to go that route, but that is the practical principle that any businessman will execute. And we say, think outside the box. Let's set the rules down. We pay employee XYZ a specific rate according to the system, which is agreed upon, and then exploitation could not prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a part-time student reading for an LLB degree with speciality in employment law and constitutional law. My question to Mr. Porter would be multifold. Firstly, Section 198 has been part and parcel of legislation since 1995. Then read together with, and by your own admission, you style yourself as an employer. Section 1B of Chapter 1, it speaks of you provide a framework within which employees and their trade unions, employers and employees' organizations can, 1, collectively bargain to determine wages, terms and conditions of employment, and other matters of mutual interest, and Section 4 of Chapter 2, employees' right to freedom of association. During your presentation, it would appear that you are suggesting, rather to the contrary, that the model that is displayed over there somewhat would replace Section 198, when Section 198 is designed, or was the intention then of the legislature, was then designed to give specific protection to employees. During your presentation also, you spoke of we elect employees and made reference to workers' forums. Nowhere in your presentation do you speak of extending those rights that are being denied, and my recent research has shown an industry that employs over 500,000 people, generates in excess of 26 billion rand, and of whom the beneficiaries are mostly, and my studies are restricted to the Western Cape and the Northern Cape, are black African males. So in essence, to suggest that labor broking or the temporary employment service somehow, in over-regulating itself, a department of labor that is overstretched, lacks capacity to police the very laws that you are now suggesting, we extend or we try and enhance them by further regulation, is, I submit with respect, sir, ludicrous. How would you then possibly suggest that the department, with its infrastructural capacities and challenges that currently face it, provide the manpower to police the kind of model that you are now presenting here as an alternative to legislation? It's a question of rule of law. There are no exclusions, the state or the employer.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Do you want to say something?
Mr. Phillips, it's I just want to emphasize that we are not suggesting that we set down new rulings, new legislation. We merely submit that we would like to have a system in place to regulate the current laws applicable and new laws that might be find applicable in getting control and ensuring that exploitation of the employee will not prevail. I, Mr. Phillips, would categorically would like to say that. If I have expressed myself through the system in providing new law, in providing new execution of those laws, no. It's merely an instrument to assist the Department of Labor to get control within this industry so that we can understand what's happening here and that we could start measuring it within the barometer which will help us in managing it going forward.
Thank you. Mr. Sambata.
Order, please.
Yes.
Chair, I just want to find out, in terms of the proceedings of today, are we going to allow the members from the public to pose questions as it started, or are we going to, given the fact that we've got a very hectic program for today, because I don't think those ground rules were clearly defined when we started off. So can somebody just tell me that, what is the way forward? Is that how we're going to conduct them? Because giving an opinion, it's a sober thing. We appreciate that. But under the circumstances that prevails, are we going to continue? Because my fear is we might not finish the program. And we've got a lot of people that still have to give us insights from different spheres of the business and labor and so forth.
Honorable Chairperson, I think this is a matter of immense public interest. And this parliament, particularly the fourth parliament, is described as the activist parliament, which means we are not paying lip service when we say we listen to the views of the public in the process of making laws. I think it's within your hands that we are not driven by matter of time. We are driven by the substance of how much are we informed on the issues at hand. We would therefore submit that the process you have been following, Honorable Chairperson, is proper and correct. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson of the Caucus.
Chairperson.
I support Honorable Gona. We are just appealing that everybody should be patient. Our message to the people was that today they must come, and those who have come here is those who have written letters and given a permission to come. And anybody, I should think, if he's appropriate for that person, finding that we are wasting time is an unfortunate, but the matter was for the public, and the public have responded, and they've been given a chance to come and say what they're supposed to say. So we'll appeal to Honorable Labour Broker Eve, or a representative, I don't know, what are you representing, that let's exercise our patience so that everybody can go out here understanding. If there should be a legislation, let's hear what informed legislation. If there should be no legislation, let's hear that, so that all of us, we understand we are fair. I should think Parliament doesn't represent itself. It represents the nation, the public, and everybody outside. So participation to this Parliament is what is paramount important, and we'll appeal that we accept that so that at least we've got a outcome which will be acceptable by everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Hollis.
Chairperson, I think the point is that all of these people are the public on our agenda today. They've written, they've phoned, they've traveled distances to be here. We're already an hour behind. We are not trying by any means to shut down the debate, but then can we respectfully request that we add another day or two to this agenda, because we're never going to finish. It's not a question of the public not being consulted. The public have written, the public have given submissions, the public have flown here and come to listen and speak. We've now got questions being raised from people that are not presenting. They are not busy giving their presentation. They're asking questions of one another and so on. I think really this is an opportunity for Parliament to be asking the questions and for the public to present whatever they want to. We've invited people to say whatever they want to, and as many to say what they want to as they deem fit. They've had opportunity to contact the office and say, I'd like to come and speak. Anybody can come and speak. But the question is just, are we going to have questions coming back and forth between, you know, people we don't know, who are not busy doing their presentation? Surely we can't go on. Otherwise, we must add another day on to this proceeding. It's not going to finish in time.
Thank you, members, for your input. Honorable Hollis and Ellis and Lowe, We have called for public hearings. We have called for public participation. The fact that these public participation are held here in Parliament doesn't suggest that this is a show for only members of Parliament. So if you want public to participate, let's allow the people that are here. I hear that you talk about the time, 4 days. It's not going to be 4 days. It won't be 4 days. We will go today. If it means that you must finish at 8 o'clock, those who want to sit and present and listen to others will stay. So we can't then call people all the way, all over the country, just to come and present their case and leave, and not give other people an opportunity to engage to what these people are saying. Then what is going to inform our view at the end of the day if we suppress people when they are here and we call this public participation? So I don't know what you understand by public participation. Some people have called, some people are not here in the list, but they are in the list. They will be participating. In any case, Chief, whether these people are in the list or not in the list, we will not suppress a person who wants to air his or her views as to what the Parliament must do at the end of the day. This house is not full. That's the ruling. We will continue with public participation. Thank you. Honorable Mr. Sambata, still on the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to first ask three questions. 4,200 employees to be belonging to you, would you keep them with you and pay their salaries and benefits even when there's no clients in need of them? That's the first question. Question leads to that. What makes you think that you have a responsibility of employees if the needs of the workplace where people are going to work is not yours? If you don't own the workplace, what would happen to these employees, 4,200, when they are angry about an action of you as a broker, not the action of the client? And at the time they are in the workplace of the client, would they be allowed to take an action in the workplace of the client against you, who's not in the in the workplace? The last one, called the Chairperson. You said that best price to the client. In your own understanding, what would constitute a best price to a client? What are the requirements that would make a client come to a conclusion that indeed between labor broker A and B, the best price is this one? Whether there's no linkage between levels of remuneration and prices given to clients. The last one said, I'm sure this might be a little bit offensive, but if it's so, you are free not to answer it. Why would you prefer to be a labor broker than to be a placement agent?
Thank you, Mr. Sambata. Mr. Botha, over to you.
So your question regarding retention is important. Because of having that employee in my employment for X period. It is true that I've walked a path with that lady or gentleman and are in the understanding in terms of his or her capabilities. Within my 64 customers, which got various demands, I could actually facilitate and ensure sustainability much more than it would be the case where that lady or gentleman was standing at the gate of one customer. I don't have the stats, sir, but we could investigate that the gentleman just behind you, I think that's important that we ask the question with regards to retention, that we actually are in a position to help that employee sustain a greater income and or sustainability going forward because of the fact that we've got a much broader spectrum of clients to help that individual within.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. You, sir.
Yes,
please tell us your name.
My name is Fred Campbell. I'd like to ask Mr. Porter a question. And just reiterate something here. Is it not correct that a lot of the blame in the actual industry is blamed on the actual companies and not the actual labour brokerages?
So now, unfortunately, I just want to also, by answering your question, refer to the second question that a gentleman had with regards to who's taking responsibility at the end of the day. We as a labour broker, unfortunately, when we talked about the profit issue, the customer was actually sitting and watching what is playing in front of him or her. Where the labour broking, trying to sustain the business, brought business to the foreground or quotations to the foreground, which exploited the employee in full, and I agree, that's wrong. My suggestion, our submission is, let's have a system where we say we've got this standard for X employee on that level that needs to be paid. It's fixed. Broker X, broker Y will have the same rate for that specific individual. The client actually could increase that more, but that would be the bare minimum. And that the broker then at the end of the day just needs to add his profit regarding the operational requirements that needs to be delivered. So yes, when it comes to wrongdoing, I would like to say that the customer were not exploited to the fullest length. The broker got all the beating and the hiding and they just ran away from the situation. And that's why we, in our proposal, submit that we get the client much more involved because it's transparent in terms of what is happening with the employee. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Your name, sir?
All right, my name is H. Busukwana. Madam Speaker, thank you so much. Thank you so much to have this time to come in this parliament. This is my first time. I did ask Mrs. Yengeni, the one she was spoken on the radio about this meeting today. So I thank you to come today here because this is the pain. What brings me here? This is the pain. What brings me here? I can hear today people talk about this, but I think the brokers are not feeling a pain. But what I feel and what I hear here still is going to be a pain. They want to put a pain more and more. But in our law in this country, we're not supposed to be abused. There is a problem of abuse in between us as a workers and the labor brokers. been going around in this Cape Town to find the work. But I was told myself I find the work when I was get some space in municipality in Skapgra. But when I was having that problem, I told my wife and then I told my children, father today is got a work. But when I was there, I did hear about something, broker. Even I didn't know what is a broker is. Because I was taught myself, I have a work, and then I'm going to work for my children, and then I'm going to work for my wife, and then I'm going to support them. But on that day, I was saying to Lord, thank you, because I got a work. But today, I see who is the broker here. Because I never saw that man calling the name broker. I was thinking maybe he's an employee who give me work. But my sick and my pain is deeply inside about what we speak about here today. I can see anyone maybe like me. Even now we are talking here, I'm feeling pain very, very, very deep in my heart about what is happening. We are oppressing here. And then today, our government, they say, is going to get work for us. But we've got a problem now with the people, they don't want to give the people work. So on that point of what you're saying, Mr. Botta, there's a question, there's a Dada after you. He's been asking you, what is your problem to not going direct to the people? If you want to employ people, you must go direct. Or your customer, it must go direct to the people, employ the people, and then give the people all what they're supposed to have, the benefits and everything, direct. But in that question, I didn't hear you answer that question proper that I'm going to raise. But one thing I want to say today, this is the pain to us, what is happening in this country about the broker's people. I'm coming even to court. When the broker coming to you, say, okay, there is a work. The other one, you say, okay, then he's going to give you 28 rand an hour. I'm a driver, got code 14 driving license. So now that people say, okay, 28 rand, I'm going to pay you. Okay, you say, all right, no, it's fine for so far because I'm starting. And then when the time goes, the thing I speak about, it was happening to me. In 3 weeks' time, there is another broker comes in. I just hear that there is other employee coming, and then now the money is going to come down to 15 rand 50 per hour. So now I'm getting to shop. Who's telling this? No, it's not me. It's not me. It's coming from the employee. You, I mean, it's not me. I'm employing you. You, somebody employing you. So he's telling you that. So now there's a big story about the broker. There's a big problem about the broker to the people. So I don't know now what these people now trying to say about this. Or we must call everyone must come here in this parliament and then you see the pay. We must wake up to cover this thing to make another toy toys because there's a lot of toy toys happening in this country. About one people they're doing wrong thing. And then you as a broker, you don't want to do this thing in the right way. So it must be a question now this side, it must be a question that side. So once something is gonna come right, or rather the broker must go away from South Africa. Because we're tired of this thing now. We're sick. We've got sugar diabetes. We've got high blood pressure. According to these problems. We've got heart disease. According to these problems. It's not nice even yourself, Mr. For what you say, you're sitting at home. You write a book, and then you give me this side and that side. You're sitting at home. But you want 1,500, you give me 2 rand. It can be nice for you then. It can be nice for yourself. It can't be. So please, people, just come right on this point. Just come right on this point.
Because we want that. We want that. We don't want you to not having work. I know that is work for you. But you must think for other people. Our sisters going there down to you, find a work and then you got less money. Even they can't feed their child for that money. They must go to you and then after that you take them there. Far away from the place she's about to work, she's gonna take taxi, she's gonna pay transport about the money you're eating. But it's very little. People don't think even about that. Please, people. Please. I'm sitting down here.
Thank you, sir. If that was a new hand, I would go for it. Shall we brief? Less than a minute, maximum 1 minute, please.
I would personally, today I registered myself as an individual. I'd like to just state a few things on behalf of the labor brokers, if I may. As Mr. Boynton said earlier on, they are restrained by broker A versus broker B. So the fact is, in line of the fact that a lot of people in the public think, oh, the labor brokers did this, the labor brokers did that. And I should state that the fact is that the companies themselves are lots to blame.
Thank you, Mr.
Porter.
You want to
respond? Madam Chairperson, my heart goes out to that because I know exactly what he's talking about. I've seen it not once. I've seen it not twice. I'm working with it every day. So it's a pity you've walked in a little bit late because I've got the solution. What we're saying is the following. That person that said, I, customer, allow you, labor broker, to come in with this rate and not ensuring that you are being paid correctly must stop. And ma'am, exactly the point that I've made before. That customer, now we're handing these employees back to them. Will they not exploit them even further? Now we've got an opportunity within the industry, sir, and I agree with you in full. Exploitation must stop. Our submission is the following. The client declare his or her right that an individual will work on. Labor broker A and labor broker B will have the same cost to company through the system fix. He or she can only add his or her admin fee upon that for the value adding in sustaining your administration of your payslip. If you are injured on duty, make sure that you get to the hospital and the correct medicine. Involve you in employment equity participation to the fullest length. I'm concerned, madam, that we are going to take a controllable environment and get more examples of slavery, more examples of exploitation to the fullest length. We've actually got an opportunity here to rectify. Utilize the correct tool. Spend time on executing this tool and get control within the industry. And I just want to say this categorically. Those of you that think that unions do not participate in broking, please come to my offices. I've got successful participation of various unions. They actually found it interesting to be sitting down with myself and being able to be in a position where they could actually also participate within my industry. We're working with people, man. We're not working with stock. That gentleman is handled like stock. And we need to set down a fixed rule of what needs to be adhered to, and let's put it into a system, and the system needs to be governed according to legislation as being set down by that gentleman, section 198 and all other relevant legislation. Let's do that. I'm happy to say that I am an employer. I am adding value to stop exploitation to that extent. I am not the biggest business, sir, because I've walked away from transactions not being right. So let's get the system to determine what is right and wrong and force the customer to comply to the set rule as being set out.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. We're going to call another speaker, presenter, but just before that, Mr. Porter, is it just a community? You kept on referring to workers who are begging, who are standing in the front of the person who wears the job. And the impression that you are giving is that the labor brokers are there to save the workers from the humiliation of that person who is going to be who has a job. We should not forget that there are employers who have deliberately retrenched their workers, not because they can't get profit, but the excuse will be that the business is going down in terms of profit. Running away from all these conditions that are there in the labor legislation, then they opt for the labor broker, which is an easy and a cheaper way. So I don't want us to think that those employers that you are referring to are not part of the plot. They are part of the plot because they have a reason of not employing people directly from their gates. They want that middleman that they can talk to. So we should not talk of employers. There are employers in South Africa who have employed people full-time who adhere to labor relations law, who can be visited by labor inspectors, where workers know who is my employer. You see, the system that you, or scenario that you're painting, it does confuse, because you are an employer, you are also a facilitator, and there's a difference between the two. So I just want to say you must bear that in mind, that as long as there are labor brokers, there's a cheapest way there's a method of eroding workers' rights through labor brokers. Those employers that you refer to will continue to behave in the manner in which you have described. But if you were not there, they would have no option. We can debate that. But I just want to make a comment. There is tea outside. Let's stretch strictly for 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, Mr. Roger Ronnie will be the first presenter. Strictly 10 minutes is what I mean.
Of Kosatu, and as our name describes, we organize workers employed in the main in municipalities. The submission that we want to make basically covers three broad areas. The one is a context to labor broking, which we think is important. What are the conditions that created this phenomena? And are there not certain steps that need to be taken at that level to basically deal with some of the problems? The second area we want to cover relates to what we consider to be a constitutional problem with Section 198 of the LRA. In that, as I will explain later, we think it directly infringes on the constitutional rights of workers insofar as it's given effect. The third area relates to our own sector, that we operate in the municipal sector, and the impact of labour broking in the sector. And in relation to that, we want to say that we're not merely concerned with the question of job security or terms and conditions of employment of our members. Our union has a history of taking up social struggles relating to services and the provision of basic services to communities. And we think that labour broking has a direct impact and a negative impact on the ability of municipalities to carry out the constitutional mandate in terms of the delivery of services. And we want to say something then about the service. We also then just want to conclude with some comments regarding what the manifesto of the ANC says, what the proposal and discussion document originating in the Department of Labour and the direction it's taking. But at the outset, must indicate that we are part of a growing army of people who are calling for the outright banning of labour broking. We need to lay our cards on the table right at the outset. We don't believe that any form of regulation is going to overcome the fundamental problems with the system, and we will explain why. The context is that the form of labour broking that we're experiencing now is fairly new. When the question of employment agencies, etc., first emerged in the early part of the 20th century, the ILO, conscious to the movement of people across national boundaries, quickly addressed the issue and introduced in the 30s and the 40s two conventions which sought to basically outlaw these private employment agencies. That was the time then of the post-war boom. The capitalist economy was booming in the Western world, etc. And there was a broad social contract in place which ensured fairly healthy terms and conditions for workers, a contract between capital and labour, essentially. By the 1970s, the capitalist economy was in extreme crisis. And it gave rise to a whole lot of changes at the macro level, which people have come to call Reaganomics and Thatcher right policies. Part of it brought about big changes because by that point in time, profit levels were starting to fall in the economy, and steps needed to be taken to how do you now start to revitalize an economy in crisis. And what they then did was then to start bringing about certain changes in workplace, moving away from big factories to smaller factories, off-site forms of manufacture, cross-border manufacturing, where before a motor car used to be assembled in one place, but now got assembled in different parts of the world, etc., under very difficult conditions for workers. And what then happened was that the ILO, then in 87, in the 90s, adopted another convention, which basically then recognized that labor broking, which had then started to emerge in the form as we know it now, needed to be regulated. And they set a whole lot of conditions that you needed to ensure that your government puts in place a whole range of things to protect workers, collective bargaining rights, trade union rights, etc., etc. And that then opened the door That convention, ironically, does not appear to have been adopted by South Africa, Convention 181, which basically recognizes and permits temporary employment services. What that means is that our obligation, our international legal obligations, is not as strong, even though we are a member of the ILO, as what it would have been if we had adopted or ratified that particular convention. Nonetheless, in 1983, the provision was already introduced into our labor legislation, I'm sure members of the committee are aware, which basically recognized that the temporary employment service is in fact the employer. This was carried forward into the Act in 1995. And what we have then is Section 198. Our essential argument is that the way in which Section 198 works is actually to infringe on three basic constitutional rights on which we believe the labor relations regime in South Africa is premised. The one is the right of everyone to a fair labor practice, Section 23.1, the right of workers to join trade unions, Section 23.2, and the right of trade unions to engage in collective bargaining. If one is to examine the LRA, the Employment Equity Act, the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, etc., one can see that that flows through the way in which the legislators have put these bits of legislation together. Now, I think it's been said, and I found it very ironic sitting here this morning, that most of the people that have spoken have by and large tried to speak of labour broking as being in the interest of employees. Yet all the legislation that exists promotes labour brokers as being in the interest of the employers. There's nothing written around on labour broking committed to paper which says that it's in the interest of employees. For employers, it allows them easier terminations, it allows them greater flexibility, it allows them to keep labour costs down, etc., and a whole range. It reduces the administrative burden of holding disciplinary inquiries, grievance procedures, etc. It reduces the problem of collective bargaining, because they don't have to negotiate with the person they've engaged through a labour broker. So all of those things are put forward in the literature as why labour broking is important and useful for the economy. But all it does, in our opinion, it is simply another attempt as part of the what has come known as neoliberal politics way to create a more profitable system, to rescue a system which was essentially in crisis. Now, why do we say the collective bargaining rights are actually... Our experience shows, and there must be no... We must clear our minds completely of this thing. The only reason labour broking exists is because it can provide labour to an employer at a cost lower than the employer would have paid if the employer had employed directly. That's the bottom line. And in that, somebody gets screwed. And that is unfortunately the worker. That's the only reason that labour brokers, not because they have the interest of the workers at all, that they don't want workers standing at the gate, etc., and all of those little fancy stories, have nothing to do with that. What it's got to do is they can provide labour at a cost lower than if the employer had employed directly. Now, the only reason they can provide labour at a cost lower than the employment, than the employer can employ directly, is because the workers that they're providing have no collective bargaining rights. The reason they have no collective bargaining rights is because they can't secure the organizational rights necessary to be able to bargain collectively. So what they what happens then is they're trapped in a vicious cycle out of which they can never get out because they can't secure. Part of the problem lies in the definition of the workplace, as people have already pointed out. Some of the problem lies in the very difficult way and the conditions that you need to attain in order to get collective bargaining rights. The second problem, the right to join a trade union. These workers are employed solely because they're placed in a particular sector by the labour broker. They can't. They often don't come into contact with that 4,200 workers. They're never ever together in a single location because they're placed out. And their location is that workplace of the client employer, not the labor broker's workplace. So to get them to organize, to sign them up, to gain a majority in terms and secure their things, that is essentially being denied. Our other experience is that the moment these workers seek to join a union, they get chopped. The moment they get threatened and they get told that there are hundreds of people standing outside the gate of the labor broker who is willing, not outside the gate of the employer, outside the gate of the labor broker who is willing to take the job. And so these workers are cowed into not joining a trade union. And by that, they are not allowed to bargain collectively. The third issue relates to fair labor practice. Now the Constitutional Court in the matter of Niahau, a matter dealing precisely with a form of labor broking outsourcing, ruled that fair labor practice can be defined as the right to security of employment and the right not to be unfairly dismissed. Now none of those conditions apply in the case of a labor broking arrangement. What simply happens is, at the end of a contract, the person is simply put aside. I want to just, if you will indulge me, Chair, read from two contracts that are at play in the municipal sector. The one is a contract by a labor broker operating in the city of Cape Town called Midway. Midway's contract with its employer reads, "Your attention is drawn to the fact that the contract does not constitute a full-time employment contract and will be renewable on a month-to-month basis depending on the operational need of our client, which may vary from time to time. Renewal of this contract will be renewed automatically unless advised differently in writing." Now, the jobs that these workers are doing are full-time operational jobs necessary for the municipality to carry out its mandate. They related in the main to waste management services. Now these are not jobs or vacancies filling up when somebody might be on leave or sick, etc., or a short-term contract. These are the operational jobs of the municipality that are provided through this misnomer called the temporary employment service. There's nothing temporary. The only thing temporary is the job security of those workers who are employed on that basis. That's the only temporary thing. Not the employment, not the functions which are actually performing. Contracts in the city of Swanee. This company carries on the business of a temporary employment service providing employees to the client. The requirements of the company's client is the sole basis upon which the company provides employment. The employee understands and agrees that the client can cancel the employment contract within 24 hours' notice. And this will mean that the employment contract is cancelled, and he or she agrees that this cancellation will be substantively and procedurally unfair. Now, in a time of high unemployment, growing levels of poverty and desperation, people sign these contracts. But what is more criminal, Chair, is that these workers who sign these contracts can't even get a copy of these contracts. When they come to the union and we request copies, we get chased from pillar to post and we can't secure a copy even on behalf of that worker. We're not able to secure a copy of the contract between the TES and the client municipality because they say it's a confidentiality arrangement that which they cannot breach and therefore they're not willing to make it available to the unions. This then has a further implication then about why I see this question of being denied a fair labour practice. When a municipality like Cape Town decides that it is going to engage a new labor broker, I think it was eloquently said to us, the new labor broker will come in at a rate of pay below what the previous labor broker had been providing labor. And the workers then are taken across and are essentially compelled through economic need to work then at a rate below what they had been working just the day before, because the labor broker had been changed by the municipality. So, when the contract, if they refuse to do it, and they don't want to work for it, their contract is terminated. Many of these contracts and these dismissals have then found their way into the CCMA. And the argument made by the employer is that there has been no dismissal. These contracts have been terminated by an operation of law. that the contract says that the employee, the client can give notice, and therefore when he gives notice, your job also terminates. CCMA commissioners have in effect started to accept that reason and follow that reasoning. So many of the dismissals that find their way into the CCMA are not found to be unfair because they're not found to have been a dismissal. If I can go into a bit more on the question of the municipal sector. We want to say that the issue of labour broking, as we started at the beginning, is not simply a labour relations issue. There are broader macroeconomic and broader political issues which we think this committee, and in fact Parliament as a whole, needs to take into account. The one is the way in which municipalities have restructured themselves in the last 2 decades, or the last decade particularly. In municipalities, they've introduced what has been known as something called new managerialism, a system which essentially serves to turn municipalities into the regulators of service rather than the direct providers of basic services. So what we have seen happening is the growth of outsourcing, privatization, casualization, and now also the use of labor brokers. Now, part of that can be traced to, for example, government grants, both in terms of the fact that there have been a cutback in government grants. Secondly, that many of these grants have conditions which, for example, restrict the amount of money that can be allocated to labor costs. So, for example, in Pretoria, in Tshwane, there was a contract which stipulated that labor costs cannot be above 28%. So to get around that, you introduce a labor broker arrangement. And that is then not shown as a labor cost, it's shown as a service fee elsewhere on the budget. And so you come within the 28% requirement. So there's a need to seriously relook the way in which this is happening. Now the impact it's had on our sector is that between 1997 and 2003, employment figures in municipalities dropped from 238,000 to 203,000. There's been a further 1.2% drop in 2006. Now, the government's own budget review acknowledges that a lot of this has been due to outsourcing in the municipal sector. Workers engaged through labour brokers are not only unskilled labour. In the municipal sector, electrical workers, water workers, workers in housing departments, workers in planning, workers in parks and forests, workers in roads, and nursing, in fact, are employed through labour brokers. So it spans the full spectrum almost of municipal services, which in our own experiences has impacted on the ability both of the municipality to deliver services which is responsive and meets the needs of the local communities they serve, and secondly, acts against the very interests of those workers who have been employed in municipalities. So we think there's a serious problem with us wanting to basically retain any semblance of labour broking. Nothing that's been said so far this morning, for example, has changed the view that we had when we walked into this room. There's nothing that can't be done by directly employing workers that labour brokers provide, other than being able to provide it at a lower rate to employers. And that form of exploitation will always exist. We do not think we need any further regulation. What we do need is, in fact, the outlawing of this particular system. The ANC's election manifesto, and I now speak in probably the majority of the converted on this one, says that in order to avoid exploitation of workers and ensure decent work for all workers, as well as to protect the employment relationship, introduce laws to regulate contract work, subcontracting and outsourcing, address the problem of labour broking and prohibit certain abusive practices. Provisions will be introduced to facilitate unionization of workers and conclusion of sectoral collective agreements to cover vulnerable workers in these different legal relationships. Now, we're saying it at face value is extremely well-meaning, but we would caution against any attempt by the legislators to seek to merely regulate. For example, the current law permits, holds the TES and the client severally and jointly responsible for collective agreements concluded by a bargaining council in that sector. What happens if there's no bargaining council? And even if it is, there's a complexity. If the agreement has not been extended, you have a problem. Then, when the agreement is extended, you then run into a demarcation dispute. So even where there's been a demarcation award, like in a matter involving workforce, which says that a worker placed by a labor broker in a particular sector falls under the terms and conditions of that sector, their ability to actually hold the employer, to pay them according to agreements reached there, is extremely difficult. So it's a vicious cycle on which they're not going to get out of, as those workers and unions find it more and more difficult to basically represent. What it also serves is to build within the workplace competition amongst workers, where workers start acting against each other because they fear that workers employed through labor brokers fear workers employed permanently are not wishing to have them employed there. Workers employed permanently fear labor broker employees are seeking to take away their jobs. So what you're having, in fact, is industrial unrest generated amongst workers as a result of this particular arrangement. We think whatever people might say about the basis on which the Namibian High Court made their decision, we think their decision is an appropriate decision, and we think that there's nothing that prevents the legislators in South Africa taking the steps that legislators in Namibia took when they made that decision. This thing about how many jobs have been lost and all of a sudden employers speaking on behalf of workers when they've never done that, when their sole reason for existing is to exploit workers, goes beyond us. Let workers speak for themselves, and if workers have said that we no longer want labor broking, then we think if the government is committed to looking after the interests of workers, it will listen seriously to what workers are saying. We're also saying that the banning of labor brokers, or simply looking at labor brokers, the work of the committee should move beyond that into areas of outsourced labor and casual labor as well. Because we think that labor broking is an overlap between labor broking, workers employed on a casual basis, often 3-4 years at a time doing work of an operational nature in the workplace, and those where services have been outsourced, who also find it difficult to organize, where their constitutional rights are also being impaired. And we think we can deal with all of those things at one time. Chair, we'll rest at that point in time. And if there are any comments or questions, we're quite willing to engage on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ronnie. Honorable Collins.
Thank you, Chairperson. Is it Mr. Ronnie or is the gentleman's first name Ronnie? Mr. Ronnie. Okay, thank you.
You can call me Roger, it's fine.
Mr. Ronnie is fine, thank you. I'm Ian Hollis from the Democratic Alliance. I would like to submit a couple of statements and then a couple of questions to you. The first one is that I'd like to submit that each one of the problems that you propose can be solved with legislation without banning labor brokers outright. I can't think of a single thing you mentioned which cannot be regulated through appropriate controls, either through law, through promulgating additional regulations, and through inspectors of the Labor Department. If the Labor Department can't get their act together, it's not the responsibility of this committee to add another 5 laws when in fact it's an administrative problem that the department has. But I have to deal with some of the issues that you raised specifically. You said in your statement that lower wages are the only reason that brokers exist. I submit to you that that is actually very one-sided. There are other reasons that labor brokers exist, or that temporary employment agents, or whatever we want to call this industry. There are additional reasons that these organizations exist. One of them, as the very first presentation we heard earlier this morning, is to source rare skills from sometimes outside of the country. People who worked on the Gautrain Many of them were sourced through things like labor brokers or temporary employment agents because they have scarce skills that need to be sourced from elsewhere. There is also the situation where a particular employee can only find temporary work in a particular company for, let's say, 3 months. And it is quite difficult for that individual employee to go and find a second company a month later to employ them another 3 months, and a third company another 3 months later on. There is a facilitation process that an employment agent, whether they're a long-term employment agent or a short-term employment agent, can provide that these brokers are able to produce. Quite obviously, this committee would not want to see exploitation continue in the industry. And that's the reason for these hearings. That's the reason that this committee exists. You later on called into question the bona fides of the labour brokers who've presented so far today and the others that are coming. But of course we have to call into question the bona fides of unions such as yourself. After all, this could just be a smokescreen for unions to recruit more members. So quite honestly, just calling into question the bona fides of the brokers that exist in this room and out there in the workplace, they could equally call your bona fides into question. Let's focus on the issue here. And the issue is the exploitation of workers, which we'd like to see regulated. This committee doesn't exist as an extension of your union or any other union in this country. The third thing I need to just say is that I've just made notes, if you'll just forgive me. Short-term work without labour brokering or labour brokers providing the facility still contradicts that constitutional point that you made earlier. Are you trying to tell this committee that short-term work itself is unconstitutional? Are people not allowed to have short-term work in South Africa? Because that seems to be the implication of that constitutional issue that you brought up just now. There are, I put it to you, other ways of regulating this industry than an outright ban. And the Namibian example, we've heard from the research that has been done into that particular case study, that many people have lost jobs. A third of the people who were in temporary work have lost their employment. So I think there's some other questions which you would have to answer if you expect the committee to take those wholesale blanket statements that you made in your presentation. There are other issues involved as well. Thank you.
Honorable Nia Kemba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just points of clarity for me. Oh, I'm Eric Nyegamba from the ANC. The manifesto that you quoted, I'm fully aware of. That's why I'm here. Just few clarities on my part. You identified three critical areas that inform your submission. The fair labor practice, trade union rights, collective bargaining, and the likes. Now, maybe you can assist us. Is the question that I raised in the first two presentations, but I didn't receive a satisfactory reply. Maybe other presentations will try to do that. You can also assist. When you have a labor broker who calls Score Matters a client, and the labor broker only have offices and computers and people who are operating those computers and answering phones. Now, those who will be placed in Score Matters will be the office where there are receptionists, administrators regarded as the workplace of those who are placed in Score Matters.
That's one clarity or understanding that one would like to get. The second one is the when a dispute arises, you are a trade union. For whatever reason, the labor broker allowed its I'm not sure whether to say its employees, because it's one question that has not been answered. Whether labor brokers do have employees without having means of production, without them having witnesses. So I think that's one area that we can talk about. But when dispute arises, in an event where human beings were placed by labor brokers to a client, as they say, if they are members of a trade union. When a dispute arises, do you cite both the labor broker and the workplace where the dispute arises? If you do, what is your experience when the dispute proceeds? The last point is a comment, Madam Chair, on a point that has been raised by the previous speaker. He made reference to Gautrain. I'm from Gauteng, in Egu-Ruleni region. There's a town called Nigel. And in Nigel, there's a factory called Union Carriage and Wagons, which have, which in fact is manufacturing components of Gautrain. And as a result of that, workers in that factory were taken overseas to be trained on certain aspects with a view of addressing the issue of skills that have been mentioned. So I'm saying it's not correct to link Gautrain with shortage of skills as if companies that supply the assembling of Gautrain are being sought through labor broking. And I'm aware that there are another union, which is the NUM, which has discussions with the Department of Transport to say how workers are going to be employed and what conditions are they going to work on. So I think sometimes it's important to respond to certain points that have been raised. Thank you very much, Chair.
Mr. Ronnie?
Thank you, Chair. I thought I was going to end up with 100 questions at once at one time. But I can accept the venom of the DA, it's fine. We're not convinced, Honourable Member of Parliament, that each and every one of these problems can be corrected by legislation. We think each and every one of these problems can be corrected by simply changing or removing one piece of legislation, and that is Section 198, which permits, because part of that goes into the argument and the answer to the question raised by the member from the ANC. Now, history has shown that in all spheres of society, the capitalist system is not a rational system. It's irrational. The fact that it has its base profit makes it irrational. It's a law of the jungle. And it's who can get the most out of what is available, who can secure the profits, who drives workers, because all surplus value is created through the labor of workers. Who can drive workers until they're naked? And that's what the system, and you can't control, you can't regulate, you can't deal with that. The moment you permit it, people find loopholes for getting around the system. And to then place it on the government or other agencies to seek to regulate something, which really can be resolved by employers directly engaging. There's nothing stopping employers directly engaging people on short-term contracts if they want to. But then, they become an employee of that employer. Terms and conditions can be bargained in bargaining councils with that employer is a party to, or in bargaining forums where that employer is a party to, which governs. And the unions who are in the majority in that workplace will be able to determine what the terms and conditions of that contract are. So if there's a need for short-term contracts, they will be negotiated in that level, in those forums. The same with the question of rare skills. Why can't, if they want to have recruitment agencies who seek to want to place people, they can place people with rare skills into those companies. But they get engaged directly by those companies and the terms and conditions again of those jobs, which fall within the hierarchy of jobs and the organogram of that structure would be negotiated between the unions who are in that workplace. There is no need for this third party intervention in this issue. And I'm still have not been convinced, therefore, that the only reason is that they are able to provide labor at the cost level. Removing the administrative costs of managing an employment contract, possibly carrying a liability for costs beyond the employment, through post-medical expenditure, through things like retirement benefits, etc., is removed from the employer through the labor broker. And that is a reduction in the costs of managing an employment contract. And that's all that they're there for. The problem, coming from the ANC, we think is to be found in Section 198. The fact that labor broking is permitted by law in Section 198, and it says very specifically there that the employee, the TES is the employer, right? I think someone read it out. For the purpose of this act, the person whose services have been procured for or provided to a client by a TES is the employee of that temporary employment service. And the temporary employment service is that person's employer. Now, that's what we call and what other observers call a legal fiction, is where the problem lies. Because if you look then at the workplace, that person can't be the employee of that TES. But the act makes that person, and therefore, when there's a dispute, if the person is placed in the city of Cape Town by Midway and gets dismissed, we can't cite, and we don't cite the city of Cape Town as a respondent in the matter. Midway is cited because Midway is the employer, and the only claim that we can make is against Midway. The city of Cape Town simply says to Midway, we no longer want that person. We don't like the attitude, or they've been coming late to work. Midway doesn't even investigate. Midway just terminates. How can Midway investigate if they're not even on the workplace? They're not controlling that workplace, they're not controlling that worker, but they terminate because the council has said we no longer want that worker there. So the problem is to be found in 198, and if 198 is actually done away with, we think a lot of the problems will effectively be resolved.
Thank you. Honorable Law. Yes, one is under man, so please, just one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it is unfortunate to realize that this public hearing today is being approached somewhat with some preconceived ideas, especially amongst others, looking at the closing down of labor brokers completely instead of looking at alternatives, which was already alluded to by the different speakers. Making reference to something that has been a trial and error base, when we look at what happened previously, Chairperson, with the National Credit Act, which came to rescue to the microloan phenomena in our country. We all are mindful and aware what happened in that paternity. That was rescued because of legislative processes that was put into place. Now my question is, for those people who do not comply to these acts, they were regarded as contravening these acts, and we all knew what the consequences of that was. The alternative, which was actually alluded to by the different speakers, I think one needs to go and investigate and re-look into this thing, and not just for the, not only looking at the one-sidedness of it by shutting them down. So, Chairperson, I think one really needs to apply your mind. And we are grateful for the inputs from the different speakers. However, the emphasis should be, we are not for the idea of exploitation, but we need to put certain systems in place. And the systems that we need to put in place is, we need to look at regulating and enforcing. Because unfortunately, that's a system that we have to look at. And that is what happened with the National Credit Act. When the National Credit Act was put into place, if enforcement was not done, and if regulation was not put into place, obviously it wouldn't have worked. By that, Chairperson, I am not saying that that is the alpha and the omega. What I do say, though, is exploitation is taking place, but at a very lower scale. And those that do contravene that act, those people must be brought to book. And I'm saying, for the stance of the Democratic Alliance is, this exact exercise must be done to labor brokers. Those who do not meet that criteria, they must be dealt with. More especially, because earlier on, I learned to understand that these people are basically, some of them are very small entrepreneurs. Now, the question is, are we going to close those people down completely instead of trying to see whether they cannot be assisted? And if we do depict that exploitation is taking place and assistance cannot come as a rescue, and we cannot manage the process, then yes, let's close them down. But we need to exhaust all the different avenues that are there in place. And I think that between today and tomorrow, after listening to the different presenters that will guide us and give us the way forward, we can make an informed decision. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Law. You said your name is?
My name is Rian Ferreira. I just want to take the same approach the union seems to be taking here regarding labour brokers and ask if we should now, and I want to make a statement, this is what I suggest we should be following, but if we apply these standards, should not we not be starting to call for the banning of unions? Every year, there's a lot of unions deregistered because of illegal operations. Every year, there is many instances, I mean, you can open your newspaper from a weekly basis, where there is misconduct during strikes by union members. There is many unions who operate illegally, without proper registration and everything. There is instances where unions take from the members, do not deliver what they promise. If these standards is applied to everybody because of a few non-compliant members, shouldn't be we then really start attacking US unions as well? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Cowley, and I refer to the present speaker. There are many, many statements that are made, which are obviously emotional and also not easily substantiated, references to non-regulation by bargaining councils, etc., etc. And we could go into the debate, but really, at the end of the day, the question I would like to ask of the speaker is that at the end of the day, are employees, or rather let me refer to this, are workers, employees, are they forced in any way by any legislation in this country to actually seek work via labour brokers or temporary employment services? That's really the question that I ask, and I'd like an answer to that. Thank you.
Honorable Gwana.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few questions for you, Comrade Rocha. One is related to the statement you made about the second broker for the same employee. Under what circumstances would a second broker be introduced if already a worker has been placed by a broker to an employment opportunity? Secondly, you've made reference to the sector-based collective bargaining agreements and the individual contracts signed by those workers and labor brokers. Are you saying to us that those contracts supersede those sector-based collective bargaining agreements in terms of excuse me, the conditions of employment? And the other matter, which so far from the presenters we've been heard, is what happens in situations of occupational injuries as well as occupational diseases, taking into account that on the aspect of occupational diseases, some of them have got a long latency period, which therefore means that they manifest themselves after years, after a person has been exposed to that particular hazardous substance or material. And I'm excited to know more about the Namibian experience. If you could unpack it for us, was that ruling banning of the labor brokers, and what did it do to the placement agencies? And indeed, I want to say, Madam Chairperson, that there are no preconceived ideas. That's why you called for these public hearings. And indeed, the intention is to find a lasting solution to the problem. But also we must remember the immediate history that we are coming from, that we had a very serious system in this country called apartheid, which was condemned internationally. And you found people in this country that were saying, yes, apartheid is bad, but were resistant and refusing to participate in methods that would deal decisively with the eradication of apartheid. But fortunately, you know, we stayed on course, and here today we've got everybody claiming that, yes, South Africa is free, everybody has got rights. The same thing will happen to labor brokers. If during these public hearings are found that they are taking us back to the era, not even of apartheid, but of slave and master situation. Indeed, this people's parliament, and in terms of our manifesto as ANC, we cannot allow that. It doesn't matter how much it does hit on the pockets of those that are living out of this system. We will have to do it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kona. Mr. Roger Ronnie.
It's always difficult having two first names, I know. It's a problem my teachers had for many years. I'm not going to basically even respond to the question of unions being banned for whatever reason. It's a illogical and a nonsensical argument to the issue that we're debating here about labor broking and the context within which it's occurring. It's quite clear from the legislation that workers are not forced to join or to seek employment through labor brokers. It's a reality of South Africa 2009 with unemployment rates at 40% and more employers engaging labor brokers, that the only way for an impoverished worker to find employment is to stand at the gates of the labor broker. Alternatively, he might find himself, as in our sector, standing at the gates of the municipality and be engaged by the labor broker who's also standing at the gate. That labor broker Comrade Gona. Then offers labor to the municipality. And I think the case of Skaapkraal is relevant. That labor broker who had been there had a contract with the municipality which said that, now we don't know the terms of that contract because we can't get to see the contract. But one can imagine the ease with which the labor broker switched, that it was quite possible, and if one looks at the contract that we'd seen in Tshwane, that the municipality was able to give that labor broker 24 hours notice to cancel the contract. So very often he's able to give 24 hours notice. He then engages another labor broker, who instead of coming in at the 28 rand per hour that the first labor broker was paying, says to the council, I can find you labor at 15 rand an hour. Now he doesn't automatically yet have that labor lined up. But those workers who are employed by the first one then find themselves automatically employed by the second one at 15 rand an hour. And because they have an economic need, because they're desperate for a job, they then work at 15 rand an hour. Now, the only way in which we partially address the growth in our sector, in Tshwane a few years ago, all 6,000 employees in their waste section were employed through labor brokers. Because only when those labor brokers, independent of their labor broker employer, and independent of the union, in fact, went on strike and said, we demand to be employed permanently by this municipality, that they've now started to engage. So the whole thing of promoting labor unrest as well becomes an added negative implication for the use of labor brokers in the sector. On the question of injuries, our understanding is that the different bits of labor legislation deal with TES and client employees differently in terms of the different bits. In terms of the occupational injuries dispensation, the labor broker is meant to register and is held responsible and has to report injuries to the commissioner, etc. But because that labor broker is not in the workplace, you've got no indication as to what health and safety conditions that worker is subjected to. Now, very often the client employer does not provide any safety clothing. They simply provide oversight and supervision of the workers and direct their work. But these workers are then required to pay for their own protective clothing and their own overalls, and then to be placed in a municipality and do their work wearing the overalls of not the municipality, but the labor broker, but which they've paid for themselves from their meager salaries. So those are further complications and realities experienced by workers employed through these things. The difficulty of extending agreements is that we currently are sitting with a dispute in our bargaining council regarding labor broker employees. We've alleged to the city of Cape Town, for example, as a test case, that all labor broker employees have to fall under the terms and conditions of the conditions of service collective agreement concluded by SAMU, IMATU and SALDA in the South African Local Government Bargaining Council. The city is taking various technical and legal points to get out of having to comply. And we foresee a long battle, a long legal battle, precisely because they can engage on taxpayers' monies, attorneys, to look for the most obscure legal point to get out, precisely because the law is there and the law permits it, and they twist the law to suit their own needs. Unions then have to use and decide, how do you use workers' funds? Not willy-nilly, as somebody suggested here, that we run away with workers' money. But how do you use it then in the interest of those workers who we're seeking to represent, even if they are not subs paying members, because we can't even access stop all the facilities from those labor broker employees. So, as I said, these workers remain trapped in a vicious circle from which there's no escape, and no amount of regulation is going to get them out of that circle.
Thank you, Mr. Rocha.
Thank you.
No, the gentleman over there.
Thank you so much, Madam Speaker.
Noted your hand, sir. I've noted it.
Not me. Okay. Thank you so much, Madam Speaker. I just want to say again about what is the pain about what we speak about here. I'm still here until this time. I'm still feeling a pain. I think this problem, since I started to see, this maybe is going to give me the deadline. I'm just trying to say maybe I'm going to die because of this pain. I'm not coming here just now to have something, maybe I got something in, I'm going to have something in my pocket. But I got nothing in my pocket till now. Since I have this pain, I didn't live nicely, even in my house. There is a sickness even now. So in the point of what I raise in this parliament, I thank you that if there is somebody see or hear or know about what I'm saying. Because here I am a worker alone. And then the oppression is on me. I got this point. I got this thing exactly the way it happens. So that is why I want to raise this point to say, if we're going to speak about this point of brokers must carry forward, that I want to say that the people, they mustn't call the brokers their employees or they helping people. They're not helping people. They oppressing people. What I write here in front of me is to say the brokers, they are not employees. They are not helping people, but they are pressing people. They are giving people the pain, more than what we have. If you're sitting at home, you don't worry if you don't have something tomorrow. But now if somebody say there is a work for you there, and then you must come and work for me, and then you know that you got something to do, your things you want to do. So now today, what I want to say, this thing of brokers, they must get out. They must get out totally. Government, I'm asking the government, I'm asking the parliament, they must take the brokers away. This year, what Mr. Botha saying about this problem of, no, this we must solve other way. But now, what I'm trying to say, that it's a long time happened. That is a long time happened. So now people, they are really, really tired of this problem of brokers. Even I think maybe it's along to the point now you're trying to raise to me to say, no, this need to be followed by the others. But the others, they don't do it maybe the way you said. Because they want to do it as much as more to press the people down again. This point, I'm trying to say to the parliament, they must take this thing away from the people because this thing is giving us the sickness. The sickness. Very bad way. If I can tell you about this thing, it's not pain for me only. Ever say, Mr. Botha. It's not only pain for me. It's pain, even this thing is happening to the black people mostly. I can say that because when I was going around, I never see the other person, like for instance, a white person is there with the brokers. I was saw all the black people and colored people, they've been oppressed by this kind of brokers. So this thing I want to raise, I thank you so much to the guy, he points out that name of two ways. Even now I didn't know about the name of the broker, who was he. But now I've got the name of that broker, he comes last. There was the first one, the name is a dolphin, the one who was paying me 28 rand. The last one, I didn't even know the name. Once I go there, and then I was trying to phone time and time, who is this man? But I find the name is a two-way, the name of the broker, two-way. But I was trying to find the man, it was in charge of that, what you call, project, whatever. But I never hear that man on the phone. Everyone say, it's Mr. Wu, and then Mr. Wu is not here now, you phone later again, and then I finish up my money. And then I didn't have money. It was last thing, even to that point, I never paid by that two-way. My money is not there, is it? And the other one, because the other one, broker is in Epping. Even I'm forgetting now the name. I'm driving the big truck of Bigfoot, if you know the company called Bigfoot in airport. I drove that one. I never paid. And then I got no one to go and claim because I don't know these people. I don't know these people. So please, people of brokers, please, people of brokers, can you just think of yourself? Think of yourself. If me, maybe I'm your brother, you see me suffer like this in front of you, but you promise me you give me work. So please, just let this thing go away from you, and then you find another way better to do the job. So please, about this, I'm asking again, please, about these people, you must think about this. If I can have a code 14, how much now to do code 14 license, and then you pay something you don't know, just money for transport to go to work and then come back, go to work and come back, and then people hungry, they don't know what they're gonna eat. And my wife also now, she say maybe on Friday, where's the money? And then I don't have money, and then I don't get paid. What's the story I can say about this? So please, people, just try to take this thing away from us. Because this thing is make us, you must point the point I'm raising, say, today I got a high blood sugar, I got a, what you call, sugar diabetic, and I got heart today. I'm not sleeping even about this point of this thing. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Conway? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just once again, referring back to the present speaker and his response to the question I have, which question was, why do workers work for temp employment services? Why do they work for labour breakers? Is there any law in this country that prescribes that workers, employees should seek work via labour brokers? And just by the realm of logic, I deduce from the speaker's answers that without the intervention or the input of labour brokers or temp employment services, many, many people, many workers would not have work, would not have jobs. I'd also just like to refer back to some of the assumptions that the speaker made in terms of bargain councils, in terms of collective bargaining, about collective bargaining rights, about unionisation, acknowledging unions and union rights, the right to organise, the right to security of employment, in terms of, as promoted by bargain councils. And I'd like to inform the speaker that the organisation that I'm part of, that I represent, certainly participates in all forms of bargaining council initiatives and has been involved in those initiatives in terms of actually bringing about self-regulation methods. And so it's a bit of an assumption to say that there's no
assistance in this regard, no commitment by the TS industry or the labour broker industry, which you like to call, to this whole process, which is essential in terms of recognising employment security and employment fair practice. Thank you, Speaker. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Corey. Mr. Roger, did you want to say something?
Yeah, no, maybe just maybe I might have spoken in a convoluted way, but I never understood myself to be saying that if workers didn't go through labour brokers, they'd be unemployed. I think everybody was opposed to labour brokers and made one very clear answer. They need to be deployed, employed directly by the companies who seek in their labour. And therefore, that's where they need to go and be employed. So we're not saying that if it was no labour brokers, people would not be employed. The question around employee TESs and the associations, etc., being part of bargaining councils, doesn't take away the fact that, by and large, even if you look at research done as far back as 2005, there were serious problems whereby people who were operating as labour brokers were not registered with the associations, etc. And even when you looked at different sectors and people that were meant to be part of different associations, they weren't. So you couldn't even find a company appearing on different databases for the same sector. So there's a whole lot of people operating under a wire, and that affects large numbers of workers. And this is not simply a case of a few errant companies. It's a systemic problem with the arrangement of labour broking, which will not go away. And therefore we're saying that the question of over-regulation and legislation is not going to help. The critical issue is to outlaw it. And Comrade Fred, I will give you a copy of the Namibian judgment when we adjourn. Shortly. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Good afternoon. Madam Speaker, I've been sitting here for a couple of hours and listening into the insights of the educated and the intellect and the argument building, which is fantastic. What I've picked up is in a 26 billion rand industry, surely there are full-time employees in this industry as well. That has to basically ensure, if I think about it, there's inceptioners, there's administrative, there's sales, there's ops management to make sure that the sites are being controlled. And I've heard outright ban from Mr. Roger. What is the union's intention, or how do they suggest those full-time employees, which forms part of the 26 billion rand industry, is redeployed or employed? On the one end, the temporary employees is being catered for or being addressed, the issue is being addressed, as do the employers or the companies or the client directly employs these temporary employees. What is the union thinking? How are they going to use or ensure that employment remains for those other, the other end, the full-time employees, which is also part of the industry? That is my question. And then my statement that I want to make is there's good and bad. I've been in a career for some time. I've had good full-time companies that I worked for, and I've had bad ones. There's, in my opinion, good temporary employment and bad temporary employment services. One should distinguish and not just shoot from the hip. I've also heard Mr. Rogers making statements of personal protective equipment being purchased directly with the little money that these assignees has to as their wages. I think it's a blanket statement which is unfactual. I think there are temporary employment or labour brokers where that cost is being catered for by that company. So there's lots of shooting from the hip. And I'd like to know how are they going to, my question again, how are they going to employ the full-time employees that's part of this 26 billion rand industry? Thank you, Madam Speaker.
ask five more hands. Let's start with Mr. Khanyana. Khanyama, Pole. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just want to ask Mr. Roger. I hear he talking about the health. As a member of the union, I'm working there in Hyden Island in a big factory. I was having an accident on the 20th of February last year. I haven't seen any official of the union to help me until now. I'm just struggling alone. I've got copies here for the x-ray. Thereafter, I hear you there talking about the labor brokers. Some officials of the union and the labor brokers are the same. I hear the dad was talking about the smuggling and robbery, whatever. Where we are working? We are working 24/7 shift, which is 7 days a week. You work 3 days the morning shift, 2 days afternoon shift, 2 days after night shift. When it comes to pay, we get only 40 hours to pay. Then you get 2 days off. Saturday and Sunday, on our company where we are working, Sunday is Monday, Saturday is Tuesday. They gave us, we've got 12 holidays there in South Africa. They take 6 holidays. We are working compulsory for free, as I said, in the weekend. They give us 6. Time we try to ask the management and the union. The union tells us we don't have a right. We went to the union, me and my colleagues, to ask this issue about the continental. Then we worked for free. We didn't give any overtime. The union write a letter to LOBs. It was from Mr. Fred from NUMSA. He write a letter for the LOBs. The LOBs took the letter, give the management. The management make us for hearing in the union. We don't have the right to go to the union. We're supposed to go to the human resource before. Then the human resource can allow us to go to the union. So I don't know, Mr. Rogers. We're just paying the money for the union, but the union doesn't help us. Doesn't deliver. We make a vote of no confidence of the substitute. The union said they want to investigate. It's about 2 months to 3 months now. We were there by the bargaining council. It was about 4 weeks back. We didn't get outcome yet. The one who was representing us, the official of the union, when we phoned him, he said to the phone, we must email him. We don't have a computer. And also, you hear my English, I'm not educated. I grew up in the farms. You see? So, both labor and the union are the same, are failing us. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you, Khanyana. What union? What union is that?
Our union is NUMSA.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My name is Mr. Zedbai. Next to me is my colleagues. We are working for one company. Our employer tried to add a 4x8 shift on our company, and then they said we work late about it because we know that our sisters and brothers haven't got a job, so they're going to employ more people. So we asked a question about payment of Saturday, Sunday, and public holidays. As we used to work 3x8, Monday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you off. So we said, okay, yes, it's right. But now it comes to the side of the family, because on Saturday and Sunday, my wife and my children is at home while I'm at work. So what is on the table for us? They said there is nothing. I said, okay, we didn't apply for the divorce against our family when we get a job. Can we sit down and discuss this matter? They said, okay, we're going to discuss this matter. So they gave us an agreement. They said it's an agreement, but we didn't hear when they negotiate about that. We didn't get the time to get a negotiation. So that's our problem. That's why we went to our unions and then we have a complaint about what has happened. Thanks, sir.
Can we just ask, make our questions short, because the food is getting cold outside. So there are three people that need to speak. Nicholas Morris. Mr. Morris.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know what you call him. I just forgot now. Okay, Ms. Chetterson, thank you so much. Based on what my colleagues have raised up here in the parliament, we were really in a serious issue. As they have mentioned now, I'm gonna put some little corrections about what happens there at the company that we are working for at present. This whole thing happened completely wrong. There was no general meetings. There is no minutes that proves that we had a general meeting. The minutes, in black and white, whereby the NUMSA doesn't come out, of which we think that is a fraud. Even though we called the NUMSA officials, they came up and listened to what we are crying for in the same company there where we are working. Our own shop swats that used to be our shop swats stood up on the tables in front of the management while the union organizations, they were there. The union organizers, they were there. They stood up on the table and spoke to us. They violated our rights, said we don't have rights, we can even throw stones on them. That is very painful. Regarding to the shift pattern that the company has implemented, they call it the Continental 4x8, of which is not any Continental. It doesn't go that way. As one of my colleagues mentioned, that if we are working 7 days a week and we're getting paid 5 days, we need to know where is the 16 hours going to. And we called the NUMSA several times, we went to them several times, they never pitch out again to us. That is why we are here. Due to agree to the man that spoke about the very painful due to the labor brokers, probably I know that. To work for the agencies is very painful. I've been there. I worked there for them 4 years. I came up with nothing. There is no benefit. I just want to say on what you said, they must get rid of those labor brokers. The government needs to help us on that. Thank you so much, Mr. Chairperson.
Madam Chair, thank you. Firstly, there seem to be a substantial number of untruths and misconceptions being bandied about here. And also, I wish to state for the record, I'm no apologist for the South African Municipal Workers Union. When you look at Section 23 of the Constitution, it does allow for workers to form and participate in trade unions of their choice. And then also to suggest that you equate or somehow, when you find fault with a particular entity, like in this particular instance, temporary employment services, you then somehow, in wanting to justify that, you say that because of the perception, it's a perception, that trade unions are delinquent, then what applies to the regulatory environment that is being proposed for these labor brokers must then apply to the trade union environment. The record speaks for itself in this country. Trade unions are regulated. Statistics will also show that since 1995, there has been a steady decline in the number of persons belonging to trade unions and the number of registered unions. Reasons, amongst others, the registrar in Pretoria having determined that these unions are but a front for labor consultants to gain entry and access to the CCMA. And the CCMA, my experience, is very vigilant insofar as representation is concerned with persons who purport to be trade unions or representatives of trade unions. Secondly, to suggest that our learned judges on the bench in Namibia are a motley bunch of fools or idiots is absurd. For judges to come to the conclusion that labor broking is a societal evil, they would then justify that decision on research, proper research also. And that judgment and the DA's response, that research has shown that as much as one-third of workers have lost their jobs, since that judgment is absolutely false, it's ludicrous and patently misleading. The judgment was the first quarter of this year. Now, how they could have established that one-third of workers as a direct result of the unbanning of labor brokers in Namibia have lost their jobs is simply beyond me. And then also, to suggest that with the unbanning, or with the banning at least, of labor broking, it's going to result in wholesale unemployment, is again, it's ludicrous. Because the labor brokers, they in themselves are providing an employment solution. Take away the labor broker and put that person in direct employment as section 213 suggests. And when you look at the definition of an employee and you look at section 198, then section 198, as we say in law, it creates an anomaly, it's mala fide. And if anything is mala fide, then the unintended consequence of the passing of that particular legislation, the obvious consequence of that must be the banning of that. Section 78 was recently found in the Constitutional Court to be in conflict with the constitutional provisions. And accordingly, it was struck off the records, the statute books. Similarly, Section 198 will not, and I believe several submissions, and I have case law also and statistics also, to support me in this contention, will be found seriously wanting. And if it's found in conflict with our constitution and the fundamental rights of workers, then no amount of argument, no amount of eloquence, no amount of research can better describe what I'm saying than that man's experiences over there. I have insight to research. I have access to the internet. I'm educated by my standards. But that man has felt the pain. And in my research, I found of the more than 6,000 recruitment agencies nationwide, 78% of them, and this I say with respect, are owned by white male Afrikaners who have scant regard for the rights, the fundamental rights of workers. And the DA's defense, obviously, it speaks to their electorate. It speaks to their constituency, an industry that generates 26 billion rand, employs over 500,000 people. They will find comfort in the defense that is being displayed today by the Democratic Alliance, and then to suggest that we, in a constitutional dispensation, have no right to air and also to voice our concerns over something which has evolved over the past 15 years into something which has become inherently evil. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Leroux.
Thank you, Chairperson.
with reference to the previous two speakers mentioning Namibia, and it was interesting that the last speaker actually put a figure to the suspected job losses that resulted as a result of the banning of the labour broking industry there. He was disputing the figure of 33%. Now, although I represent the labour broking industry, I would tend to agree that that's probably on the high side. Our own fact-finding mission indicated that the percentage of people who are now unemployed as a result of the banning is upwards of 10%. Now, whether you're talking about 50,000 or whether you're talking about 150,000, it seems to be that we are in agreement that we are talking about job losses. And for that reason, given the current economic circumstances and given what I thought was the mission of all of us, labor, government, and business, namely employment creation, we need to look very, very, very carefully at the impact of a possible banning. That's point number one. Point number two, just in terms of VAT income, our industry contributes 3.5 billion, thousand million rand to the fiscus, to tax. This is contributed, this is paid. It's paid by legal operators, it's paid by compliant operators, and therefore hardly can we be called slave drivers or slave owners if, by example, that's just one example, forget about the 4,000 people that we've put through learnerships, our industry exemplifies, we walk the talk. But that 3.5 billion rand is enough to more than finance President Zuma's retraining exercise, which he has proposed as a result of the retrenchments later down this year. He was talking about 2 billion. It can actually double that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, Roger. Oh, sorry, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. See, Samuel, as the ANC, we talk about a decent job. I don't know how you see the your submission helping us to get to the decent job. I've been listening to everybody speaking. There's two things which are lacking. Who is the employer? I had never been answered. Can we start defining the employer and defining the employee so that we understand what we are talking about? Because till such time we can say who is the employer, who is the employee, we are all talking in circles. Some are talking how much I must have. So some, I don't know whether you can clarify and define that. I can witness that in 2006, when we, in ILO we were talking about a decent job and a typical worker, and who is the worker and who is the employee, BUSA was represented by Mr. Van Vieren, and all employers went and abstained, and government and labor vote to say let's define this. And I'm not surprised today that we are not getting that definition from every employer or labor broker who is here. But Samu, there's this thing that I had never heard from any presenters, and I don't hear from your proposal. What criteria does labor brokers use to pay salaries of the workers? And what legislation do they apply when they pay? I heard that 70% of the employees in the sectors are from labor brokers. It doesn't say, and the growth to the economy is 70. I don't hear how much does that individual benefit, which is a bone of contention. None of the people who have spoken, so I don't know what some from your own understanding and what you have witnesses you have found to be. People doesn't have benefits. As the government, led by the ANC, our consensus is labor brokerage is 70% of the economy.
the day, they are not paying any benefit. I don't know what, that's what we witness. There are no benefits. When you go to the Department of Labor, everybody is claiming. They go to the hospital, they don't even have money. They, when they go on pension, they don't have pension, they don't have provident funds. I never had one of the presenters saying anything what they're going to do about that. And some maybe help us to say from the union perspective how you see it. I was a bit disappointed by the one of my learned friends from DA that you are here to extend the union. I don't think at the ANC that's what we are saying. We have called this hearing solely to hear what people are saying from all corners of this country and their electorate to this government. We are not by any chance seeing anybody presenting here extending itself to this portfolio committee. This portfolio committee just want to hear what people are saying and what is it that this government of the ANC who have said we want to see decent jobs. How are we going to deal with it so that we can come with common goals? So I should think the committee also, if they want people to say things, they mustn't come here and tell them that they extend, because that is a member of the committee. And we apologize on his behalf, I should think, as the member of this committee. But I should think that's what we would like to hear from all of you. The truth of the matter is that everybody has been talking about the skills that labor brokers are building skills. We do have skills development. None of those labor brokers have said how did they implement the skill development act to the latter and ensure that there were skills. None of them have said that. Employment equity, which was done as a result of the apartheid evil which we have all passed. None of the labor brokers are saying for us to put in line everything. This is how we're going to do with the Employment Equity Act. And this is how we have used it so that we had achieved this. But everybody talking about skills and promoting people. So Samu, I don't know whether in your experience as the labor movement, you have realized that the labor brokerage had never used any act like skills and employment equity. For the sole reason that they want to stay in the past. I'm not sure whether you have found that as some that they are actually implementing or enforcing those laws. So I'm coming to this point, Samu, also. Whether you believe that the labor brokers, when we can legislate labor brokerage, they will do like they do in the other form of laws which are existing currently. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There was a hand this side. A new hand? I need a new hand. That's right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a worker. I am not a highly educated person as some here. But what I can say is out of our stable as such, we have taken 53 street children and we have actually taken them through training over the last 3 years and they have become mechanics, two of which are women. It is easy to say the industry is not participating, the industry is not giving to the employment equity. We are. I have the facts. 95% of our people have provident fund. There's medical aids. We are registered with WCA and we have a good standing. It is unfair to label one or two majorly disturbed individuals out there on the industry. We are looking after our people and our motto is the advantage is our people. And I think we are losing track of the actual employees. Yes, it's nice to fight the people, but let's look at another point, the core problem. When the tenders are coming out, it is a practice that it's 90-10% ratios, 90% price. Why don't we start there? Why don't we look at 50% price, 40% compliance, and 10% BEE? Why aren't we looking at that? It's easy to slander the people that are delivering the positions and the jobs out there. What about the people that are causing it? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. First of all, just what the lady said now is very surprised to me. Really surprised. As per that lady from the ANC spoke now about skills creations, the labor brokers, they never create skills for anybody that goes apply job from them. You go there with your CVs and your qualifications. They take you there to the place where they place you. You go work there. The sooner the contract is finished, you come out with nothing. You just go home with that last salary of that week where you end, which is very painful. I stood up just for that. They say there is a skills creations. No, I disagree. I've been there for 4 years. Maybe that started right now, as we speak. And then, on what that lady said, there is benefits that they are giving their people. I can say that she can say that because that people are not here. But if they were here, they could disagree with her also. And the labor brokers, I never heard any labor broker that gives beneficiaries. There is no provident funds, there is no medical aid, unless you find yourself a job, a permanent, which is a permanent job, is where the beneficiaries are and the medical schemes are. Thank you, Ms. Chairman.
Can I make a ruling that says let's go out for lunch? We experienced some problems out there. I've got that message. So we must go out for lunch. And when we come back, I've seen one hand, two hands. We'll start with those two hands and then we go to another presentation. It is the only two hands that are outstanding, and Mr. Brosa, and then we go to another presentation.